Okay. This is our Monday night call, September 26, 2016. We're a little late today. It's like 9:15. But we will run to 12 o'clock. I'm going to skip the song. John is ill tonight, and I've kind of come here to fill in. I didn't really prepare anything, but we've got a lot of stuff going on that we can discuss. I'm going to go ahead and do that again with the recording on. Oh, it is on. Somebody turned it on. So, okay, I don't know if you got me announcing it, that it's...
Let's see.
It's September 26th. Okay, so you got me on recording. Thank you, whoever pushed the recording to help me along. Thank you very much. Okay, so a lot of stuff going on. John was sick as a dog this past 4 or 5 days. He's still sick. He did push himself to get the mailing out, and it went out last night. And that is, and the latest thing that was put on is this announcement to the legislators and the governors. And I mean, we got a whole lot more stuff that we want to get out there, but this paper that John has made here is basically where we want to be, you know, as far as what it states, what we're trying to accomplish with these committees of safety and bringing our representatives back into the Constitution. The information to our legislators, governors, and judges is the last paper that went out, and everybody should get familiar with that, because it's kind of puts all the issues of what we're fighting into that. You know, this has went to everybody, and this is actually filed as a case. We're going to get a number, so they have to put it in. This is serious now. They're going to start looking at us. So it's very important to get your committees of safety going, because now that this paper's in and there's going to be a number and we're going to be filing stuff into it, that's not just like sending it and they don't file it. Now that there's a number there, of course, we're going to be in the courts. And anything that they do, we're coming in as the tribunal. And I don't know what they're going to do. It's going to be very interesting to see what they're going to do, actually. So if you read this thing, this notice of unanimous resolution, this really sets the stage for what we plan on doing, you know. And they have no excuses now, you know, when you go in and you're talking, well, you know, you can state that we have put them on notice about this stuff. And I think the nice thing about this is if you do like what Robert was saying and stand up and get to, well, first of all, you got to start a committee of safety, whether you got 5 people or 7 people or 10 people. You can't go to any meeting, any county meeting, any town board meeting, if you don't have a force of people. And what's a force of people? Well, it's different for different towns. Depends on the population. You know, your smaller populated areas, it only takes a couple of people that are able to talk to run the thing. But, you know, the bigger the area is and the more people you have in an area that show up for these meetings, the more people that you really going to want to pull together to come in there. And, of course, you need somebody who's a good mouthpiece. But if they're standing there and they got 10 people behind them or 7 people or 20 people, believe me, that makes a big, big difference. It's, you know, most of these local things, your local representatives are used to doing things with no pushback, with no repercussions. When they get people that come in that can articulate, that stand there, it's just like the court watcher syndrome. And we know that works. We know that when there's 5 or 6 people in a court and they're listening and they're taking notes, that the judges get nervous. They're not used to ever having to watch what they're saying and watch what they're doing. And so that creates a different paradigm, so to speak. It's even easier to do when you're talking about a local meeting, because nobody's going to hold you in contempt. I mean, they could try to kick you out and stuff, but it's certainly not as serious as standing in a court, you know, which we do, which we have done and we will be doing. And so, you know, as you educate yourself, and this paper is pretty good as far as, you know, any public officials, look at, we've put them on notice. It's in writing on no uncertain terms. This also went to, we picked up another, you know, we've been sending this stuff out to 4,000 media outlets. Well, I think John was telling me that they picked up, he picked up another 4,000 or 5,000. So now we're up to like 8,000 or 9,000 media outlets, you know, and that too also may make a difference. I mean, look at the media needs to start reporting this because it becomes very blatantly observable that they're not doing their jobs. Everything's an issue today. Everything. They've got us so dumbed down and so lackadaisical. I mean, and even those of us that are not dumbed down, what they do is they intimidate us and they marginalize you. And they're always going to try to take your credibility away, you know? And so being educated and being able to articulate, or at least surround yourself with somebody who can articulate in your group, that's going to make a difference. And when you go out and you speak in these places, like Robert says, people are going to hear you, and you got to make sure that you tell them, look at anybody that at some point you got to announce, look at, I'm having meetings, call, you know, go here, call me there, we got this site, you know, we show up on Tuesday nights, we're in the Grange Hall or whatever, and you'll see people are going to start coming. Now, the other thing is that I don't know how much time we have left. There's a lot of crap going on right now all over the place, throughout the world, throughout America. There's a lot of pushback. There's an issue with the money. There's an issue with, you know, even on an international basis, you know, they want to start a war if they can. They need chaos, because if they have chaos, then they feel comfortable locking us down. And that's something that we cannot let them do. You know, if they get Congress in a room and they say you have to do this, or we're going to be under martial law tomorrow, or you have to put them under martial law. Martial law is not something that they should be voting on anyway. It's that doesn't work like that. You know, it's not. But the way it does work, though, is if they do it, and they're not supposed to do it, it's up to your governors and your legislators and your sheriffs being your first line of defense to not go along with it. Of course, we know that most of them have been bought and paid for, and they got the make on them, and so that's how they control them. And the only thing that's going to fix them, if you can fix them at all, is having the people come out in force and just knowing what your rights are, knowing the Constitution, knowing, you know, what this country was founded on, and being able to articulate it is very powerful. I saw a video when they were trying to replace the president of Argentina there, and actually it was America that was doing was trying to set up a dictator, and they kidnapped Chavez and put him out on a ship. And took him out, and they had these troops come in and storm the palace that his place, the capital. And in the meantime, he had a lot of people that were loyal to him. And I don't care what you think about Chavez, but he was smart enough that he knew to take care of his own people. I mean, he used a lot of that oil money to do good and give them health care and this, that. And a lot of the people did love him because he did take care of them. I'd say he took care of them probably even better than what we get taken care of in this country with our great resources. So at one point, they finally did win the palace back. And the guy who was propped up by the UN to be the new president, he said, Oh, according to international law, I'm the this and that and this and that. And he did this big spiel, and there was like silence in the room. He like backed him up. And the one guy said, no, you can't. It's in the Constitution. The vice president's president. Arrest him. And they arrested him. And it was over because one guy said, no, the chain of command is, since they got Chavez, it's now the vice president. And he reminded them, because they had a democracy just like we did. They had a constitution that they were going by, and that constitution was able, you know, they were able to recapture the palace, and they forced them to bring Chavez back. So whatever, I don't care what you think of him. The fact is we should not have been over there propping up a government that we stuck our fingers in. You know, we're always over there nation building, and you can't you that's not how you do things. We should be teaching by example. We shouldn't be assassinating and doing nation buildings. That's the problem with America, and that's not us. That's these corporate people that have taken over the government doing this stuff. So, you know, I want to make it clear that it's very important to know your basics, because it will become viral if you can state it. And look, we got a lot of good people in this country, and a lot of educated people, and we got a lot of technological people, and so when as things get bad, as the inflation goes up, and it's going to, I don't know, you know, where we're going to be as far as, you know, how we're going to get through the economic piece, but the way that we could get through it is on a local level is to make sure that we're doing business amongst each other and keeping things civil, because this thing that we're facing is not going to be one on a national level. I mean, it may get to the point where the military will take sides, but we can't, excuse me here while I get rid of this phone call. We can't wait and hope on that. And I don't even know that that's a good thing, because there's so many factions up there and people that we don't know who's doing what. At least at the county level, you feel comfortable operating within your county. I know what my county issues are. You should know what your county issues are, especially when it gets down to the fact that we need food and water and fuel. And what's going to make people come into the committees of safety is as things get worse and you go to these meetings and you speak up and they try to knock you down by usurping their authority over you, and you come in with people, you're going to get people wanting to join your committees of safety. So it's very important that you start that process now in your counties, and if you can talk to your sheriff, that's a great thing. But if you can't talk to your sheriff, you work on getting rid of him. This is going to go down in an election vacuum if they don't suspend the elections, if something doesn't happen for that to happen. It looks like they're pressing real, real hard, you know, to have some chaos going on about that time. I'm not even going to speculate on what they're going to do or how it's going to happen. I mean, you just look at all the news and the alternative news, and you know how they've been pushing Putin to stick him into a corner where he has to fight back. You know, they used the same tactics on the guys at the refuge. They made sure they fired on them every time. You know, they stopped them and then they fired at them, knowing that a mile down the road there was a roadblock, so they made sure they were going fast enough. And then when they did finally stop them, every time somebody said something in the window, they didn't say get out of the truck. They fired 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 shots at them, and then they said, oh, we're not getting any response. Well, when people are shooting at you and you're putting your head down not to get killed, you're obviously not going to come out, and they knew that, and they just escalated it. So these tactics run all the way from what we're doing to Putin to antagonize him and put him into a spot where he feels like he has to strike out at us, right down to them conspiring to kill Lavoy Finicum, which I don't know if you've seen that report on the internet of how that was accomplished, a premeditated murder, and it was done in such a way that they knew the sight distances, they knew the speed, they knew the curve. They really set this up. It's really disgusting. You should be sick to your stomach when you get done watching it. And then there's another report about how they used the foam bullet to make him, knowing that they would shoot him down in his left side where they knew he had a holster, so that when that bullet hit his ribs, he would reach for the wound, and that would give them an excuse to kill him. And so I suggest that everybody goes up and watch that. If you want to know what kind of evil and what kind of enemy you're up against, just watching those two films that were put, the analysis of the murder of Lavoy Finicum and how they did it and what they did and the whole setup. And then that's the part of knowing thy enemy. Get your head out of the sand. There's nothing these guys won't do. There's nothing that they can't do. And they have, and if they put their mind to it, they have the resources to do it. They have the resources to do it, I think, on a somewhat limited basis. I don't think that they have the resources, and I don't think they're organized to do it everywhere all the time, but they certainly have the resources to take out the live wires and where they see the threats are. So what we have to do is we have to make sure that we come together as a community, and then after we get our communities, then as a nation, and come out and stop and say enough is enough. And like Brent said, I don't know if Brent is here. I hope he is, because there was a lot of good stuff, a lot of good discussion last week as far as what constitutes martial law. And there's very specific things. And martial law was not meant for our government to do on us. You know, I mean, it's one thing when you have an area where there's stuff going on and the courts can't open and goods and things can't transport through. You know, there's been incidents in history where like the unions struck and they were fighting and they were trying to break the unions. But in the meantime, the food's not getting through to the city. And that type of a situation, then the government has a duty to not let this skirmish, I don't care who's right or who's wrong, the ultimate thing is the people in the city are suffering. So at that point, the president orders them to stop, and then when they don't stop, then the military action comes in. So that's supposed to be a temporary and small thing. To try to put the whole nation under martial law is a wartime thing when you've been beat by a foreign army and they're coming in to establish a new government. It is not something that we're meant to operate on. And as long as the courts are open in an area, they have no excuse. They have to give you the Constitution. I mean, we understand when there's bullets flying and somebody's killed somebody or they're looting or they're doing whatever they're doing, you know, you're going to be under military rule. They're going to arrest you. They may even kill you because now you're doing hostilities. So that we understand. But, you know, to try to lock us down and tell us we can't function as a nation, and that we're going to be under curfews and all this stuff for an unspecified amount of time and maybe never come out. Of course, they're not going to tell us that. They're going to go, oh, just until things get better. And the other thing is, you know, if we allow them to take away and create a situation where there is hunger and there is strife, it becomes much easier for them. That's why we should be, you know, we have a lot of people that are in groups. You know, look at anybody who is in everybody's the militia in this country. We all are, and, you know, all males and even females, I dare say, that are of adult age, over 17, I think it is. They say 45, but I think it doesn't matter. I think you can, as long as you have a military grade weapon and you can use it, you are a potential militiaman, and you're expected to defend your country. And this country, there's no country in the world like America is that has as many people that are fulfilling those clauses of the militia clauses of the Constitution, which is to have a military-grade weapon and be able to use it. Those are two things that are expected of you. So anybody who's a hunter or anything, you're already fulfilling it, whether you know it or not. And you are deterrent, whether you know it or not. And that is one of the deterrents that have stopped them so far. And so, you know, so organizing in these committees of safety is going to be the next step for... Hang on a minute. Somebody's ringing me here. Anyway, if you don't organize into committees of safety, you won't have a say in what's going on, and there'll be no pushback of the people. So that's why I don't know how much time we have. I know there was a date thrown out there that, you know, they're gonna stop accepting the American dollars overseas on September 29th, which very well, and what's going to happen is that's not going to make everything explode. That's only going to affect the businesses that are doing business internationally, which is most of the corporations, since we don't make very much in this country. So that's going to filter down. That was like the putting the virus in, giving the shot. What's the incubation period? How long is it going to take that virus to spread? How long is it going to take the people to realize the money's not worth anything? How long is it going to take so that the inflation gets bad enough that we start not being able to afford to get our essential things, our products? I don't know. Is it going to be 2 months? Is it going to be 6 months? Is it going to be a year? And a lot of it also depends on what their plans are. You know, I think that they want to keep the Federal Reserve note alive within our borders. I have my own reasons for thinking that. Look at, they've already promised China and Russia to back the, they had them buy our debt, and now they owe them money, and they said, don't worry about it, we have collateral. And that's what's about, that's what all this federal land grab is about. Because the land that they're grabbing has resources. There's uranium, there's coal, there's oil. And they've promised that to these governments that have propped up the debt. And that's not you and me. We didn't do that. That's the leaders that have been stealing our money and making unconstitutional deals with foreign countries doing what they're doing. It's not the average American person's problem. But it's the average American person's problem to identify those criminals and bring them to justice and to look at, we could pay any debt off if we all could just bring back the free market economy that we used to once have. I'll tell you what, this, you won't recognize this country in 5 years if we ever get back to an actual economy that runs the way it's supposed to, without all this interference and without all this graft and corruption. And even right now, we're on the verge of such technological advances that they've been holding back from us. I don't know how much, you know, everybody knows, but if you're educating yourself at all, you know that one of the things they don't want to do is they don't want to get us off this oil. They want us to be dependent on the stuff that they control. Meanwhile, we have technology that's beyond even what you can dream if they would just let it go. And that's the potential of where we're going to go if we can override this and ride it out, that there won't be this big, heavy thing over us that doesn't let anybody, any entrepreneur, pursue the newest stuff. And when new stuff comes out, These multinational, multi-billion-dollar corporations use all their resources to snuff it out. The only one who can stop them is us. And don't forget, we outnumber them 800-1. 800-1. The minute we stop self-policing for them and say enough is enough, it's over. Look at it. It's Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz. Click your heels together. I want to go home. That's all it takes is for us to act, for that whole thought and idea to come through society. You don't even need it doesn't even have to be everybody, because once it goes, it becomes viral. And it's up to us, all the people in the liberty groups, in National Liberty Alliance, and anybody who's doing anything to reveal this stuff, and everybody knows a piece of it, but the whole picture becomes evident when we raise our consciousnesses to a point that it runs through, and at that point we all stand up. I don't know if you know what the 100 monkey syndrome is, where they were watching a bunch of monkeys on an island, and one of them decided to start washing the coconut. Don't hold me to the story, but I'm going to ad lib it. And then she taught her children to wash it, and it started spreading around the island, and they were watching how this spread, how they learned, how the monkeys learned, and it got up to about 100 monkey. That's why it's called the 100 monkey syndrome. And when the 100 monkey went to the water to to wash off the outside of the coconut to make it easier to get into it, all of a sudden, all the monkeys instantaneously started washing their coconuts, even even on other islands that weren't connected. So what's up with that? So you can't deny that there's this force out there that we're connected, that there's a consciousness, and that we come under that consciousness as a people. And that's why we believe in one nation under God, because that is under those laws of nature, and nature's God. And that's what makes us different than them, you see, because they don't believe that. They think that they're God, that when enough perseverance and force, that they can push the laws of nature and recreate it into their own image and likeness, and that's what's going on, and that's what we're up against. So this paper which I believe is up online right now, which talks about all the FEMA national readiness exercises, you know, and bringing in the UN, because that's what their plan is, and Rex 84. Look, at you need to read that so that they can't baloney throw you into believing that there's any validity into what they want to do. What we need to do is this, as this goes out, as this education, because that's what this is an education, and it's also a calling out of the false flag that they're going to try to do. In this paper, everything that's going to happen has been called out. So one of the best way to stop a false flag is to call it out. And I can tell you it's been done before. And I don't know, you know, what you think of Alex Jones or anybody does. I know he likes to holler and scream, but I can tell you that there's been a couple of false flags averted because there was publicity that was thrown onto a thing that was going to happen, and it never happened, you know. And one of them was a battleship that was ready to be decommissioned a number of years ago, being sent to the Middle East with a skeleton crew, and they found out about it, and they started screaming about it. What are you doing? You're going to sink this ship and start an international incident. Why are you sending this old ship out with a skeleton crew? It doesn't look. And eventually, the ship turned around and came home. So that was a definite, I believe, was a definite false flag that was averted. And that's what we need to do. We need to turn that ship back and put it into port and not let them take that thing and make it an incident that's going to be an excuse to put the chains on us and lock us down, you know. And most of this has to happen. Well, all of it does, really. I don't have any faith in anything happening on an international or national level that doesn't happen at the grassroots first, at the county and the town. If you can't control your town and your counties, you're not going to control the nation. And, you know, the federal government has become very large, and there's nothing wrong with our federal government the way it was set up, but you have a corporate overlay that is doing things that is well beyond the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, and they have usurped their power and authority by giving federal aid, by stealing our money and then giving it back to us with strings attached. That's how they did it, and so their feet stand in our towns and in our counties. So if you can make sure that they don't have any standing in your town or your county, make sure that they're not doing anything that they're not supposed to be doing. And the reason they're not supposed to be doing is because these things that they're trying to do, they need to be done at a local level. Nobody can take care of the people as well as the people can take care of themselves. So that's the lesson that we need to learn, and we need to make sure that we're running this stuff and knowing what's going on. I mean, look at we this got sent out, this paper here, this notice got sent out to all the legislators, all the judges, all the courts. But we should also now be trying to send this out to the sheriffs. Of course, that's going to take another, I don't know, you know, couple thousand, $3,000 to do, which we don't have right now. But the more we can notice them, I don't, you know, some of them won't read it, some of them will throw it away, but we don't need all of them. We just need enough of them to read it and to act. And, you know, I know we're not going to get 3,140-something sheriffs, but we don't need 3,140 sheriffs. Look, if we get some good sheriffs in counties that are adjoined and the people get together and do the right thing, it's going to be no different than setting up that committee of safety and going in there and holding their feet to the fire and people going, yeah, and joining. So a couple of brave sheriffs that have their constituents behind them are going to be a really relatively small force that are going to initiate the catalyst. Look, at you got this nation has got gasoline all over the place, and all it takes is a match to light that fire. So, you know, we want to do a controlled burn, but it's one little match that starts the fire. You don't need an A-bomb, you just need a match. So, you know, become that match, become that spark in your county by initiating your committees of safety and bringing people onto the idea that, look, at this government is not going to fix themselves. It's the grand jury that's designed to fix the government. And who's the grand jury? It's the people. You know, they can't fix themselves because they are our servants. And that's why they fear common law grand juries. That's why they fear runaway grand juries. You know, oh my goodness, they're going to investigate everything and we're not going to have any control over them. And look, we recently discovered in the federal grand jury handbook, and I don't know how widespread this is, but at least the places that were checked in our initial investigation, in the grand jury handbook, it says in there, it tells the grand jury that if the federal prosecutor doesn't sign the indictment, that it doesn't go through, and that's a safety valve. Well, who's that a safety valve for? That's a safety valve for their corruption. That's what that is. That is a subversion of the Constitution right there. Whoever put that book out and who's ever putting it out there, I don't even know if it's valid. They could be box of books that somebody like George Soros had printed up and dropped them off to the courts. Here's your new grand jury books. That's how they operate. And maybe we should take a lesson from them, because they just, what they do is they act like they're right and they steamroll ahead. You know, get your, you know what, go into your courts, ask to see the grand jury handbooks. What instructions are they giving the jury? Look, in this country, we're supposed to have nullification. Where does nullification come from? Well, if we had good legislators and governors, that would be nullification there by them doing the right thing, nullifying anything that wasn't constitutional. Well, we know how that's working. They've already got them all on the take. So the nullification has to happen at the local level. It has to happen in the courts, in the grand juries, and the petite juries. That's where it has to happen. And that's up to you, and it's up to me. And we can't have them bullying us. Look, it's all there. It's all in history. And anybody that tells you anything any different is a lie. It's smoke and mirrors. You know, let them prove it to you. One of the nice things about knowing the fundamental principles is they can't answer them, and they won't want to answer them. So you need to learn them yourself. You can't defend them if you don't know what they are. And, you know, all of the paperwork that's written, all of the paperwork that we file is all full of those fundamental principles, and it's full of footnotes. Those are teaching resources. You can write papers from the papers that we write, because it has all the footnotes in there. You don't have to use any of your own words. It's all been said before. The Supreme Court, American jurisprudence, our forefathers, it's all been stated before, and there's nothing new under the sun. They haven't changed any tactics here. Yeah, technology has grown, but it's the same thing that they've always done. It's the same usurping. It's the same lie. You know, men don't really change when it comes to envy, jealousy, and hate. We're still men. We still are susceptible to the same things. And so the answers are the same answers. I can't stress it enough. The things that our forefathers were fighting and the things that England was doing to us is the same things we're fighting today. It's just on a different scale today. It's more blatant today than it was back then. But, you know, things were slower back then. You know, when they threw you in a ship to take you to England under part of their Patriot Act because they couldn't get anybody over here convicted. And the king said, you had to take a ship ride that could take you a couple of months across the ocean. That was a long thinking time. Today, they arrest you under the Patriot Act and put you on a plane and take you to Guantanamo, and you're halfway around the world in 6 hours. You're done. So that's the difference. That's the only difference. But the principle is the same. It's a violation of your fundamental rights. And they do the same thing over and over and over again. So anyway, I don't want to get going too much. I guess if Brent is there, we'll go ahead with Brent. I know I skipped the Bible reading, but, you know, I didn't prepare anything. So I think if Brent wants to go, we'll let him go, and then we'll discuss the committees of safety further when Brent is done.
Thank you, Gerard. And well, I'm Lord willing, if I get to it, I'll talk about the Bible a little. I mentioned something talking about the strategy of the evil empire. It's always been the same, hasn't changed. I just discovered, trying to get some things published, that the largest Bible publisher in the world is in China. And the largest Bible publisher in the world is licensed to publish Bibles in China. And many of the American Bibles that we have now are published by, I say published, really I should say printed by that company. Now, they figure this. Of course, they only allow one Bible, apparently, to be printed and distributed in China. But they figure that their power is based upon money, because money buys force, not sway, force. And all of the evil empire operates purely on force. Force and threat of force, and if that doesn't work, then more force and more threat of force. That's the only tool the evil empire has. The largest Christian publishing company in the United States is the conglomerate often called Zondervan. It has other companies under it, but it's owned by an anti-Christian fellow, a very well-known fellow by the name of Rupert Murdoch, a Jewish fellow. He also owns Fox News, and he's owned CNN for years. He's owned all the networks, conservative and liberal, now the largest Christian publisher. Of course, what he figures is, as do the Chinese, our tool is money, and money buys force, the force of power and the power of force and threat and military might and bureaucracies, armed and policemen, and et cetera, ad nauseum, ad infinitum. Well, they think that that's the power. Now, on the other hand, the kingdom of God, the laws of nature and the laws of nature's God, and the government founded upon those, knows that money will not win the day. What wins the day is the revelation that comes in from the outside, the laws of nature and the laws of nature's God. And when men hear the truth and the order, the arrangement of order that God has given men, they're drawn to it. And if they but will be given the power to do it, they will overcome the evil empire. That's the history of the world. Money and power and force and viciousness and domination versus truth. Truth and the covenants of God that tell us to dominate not each other, but to dominate the land and serve each other. So when we talk about the laws of nature and the laws of nature's God, those are the things of which we were talking a while ago, or Gerard was talking about the martial law. And it must be said again that the law of the city, there's only two fundamental kinds of government in the world. They both rest upon two different kinds of law, fundamentally antagonistic kinds of law, called the law of the city and the law of the land. The law of the city and the law of the land, or the land law, as Magna Carta puts it, as our Constitution puts it. lifting that phrase from Magna Carta. That spells the history of the world. Now, the way that martial law will be kept out of our common law country, and we are a common law country, although the evil empire and the useful idiots and the minions of the evil empire, the myrmidons, the ones that kill on command because they want a paycheck and security, those folks will do what they're told and what they want to do, especially at the top. Of course, you've got the good, the bad, and the ugly. The bad to the bone, they are on the top. They are the ones that have been disenfranchised from the blessings of God for whatever reason, such as Hillary Clinton, a woman who's never been loved, never been loved. And when a woman has never been loved, you get a murderous Jezebel. And there are many, many examples in history. And she's another one. That's what we're up against. But of course, down below, they just want a job and want security. The Secret Service agents that guard her and help her, some of them may be ignorant. Some of them may just want a job. This is just an example. It goes all the way from the top to the bottom and spreads throughout the country. People want security worse than they want freedom. And so they'll do anything. I know a sheriff locally, who said that he's going to get his, he's going to compile ammunition, he's going to retire soon, he's got his retirement set back, and he's got a place bought up in the mountains, and he's going to take his guns and ammunition, he's going to go up there, but in the meantime, before he retires, he's going to do the bidding of the evil empire. I'll do what I'm told as long as you pay me. Just pay me. And the evil empire has money. China is printing Bibles. They have one of the largest presses in the world that can handle that kind of onion skin paper. There are very few of them, by the way, I've discovered. And because of it, they think they can buy the force that they want to buy to control other people. Here in the United States, there is the money-making machine. The money-making machine called the Federal Reserve Bank. And that's what they call it. And how wonderful it is. Don't even have to go to Congress anymore to ask for money. The power of the purse doesn't exist that our Constitution intends, where Congress has the power to hold the purse strings. No, not at all. They just print more and pass it out. Pass it out to the state governments. Pass it out to the county governments to jail federal prisoners. That's one of the chief ways they control the local sheriff, by the way, in every county in America, even the smallest of counties in the rural areas where I'm from, counties of 20,000 people, building new jails, have built new jails to house federal prisoners and make millions of dollars. And they just print the money. And then when things get blown up big enough, they back off. They back off, and of course the income tax system is designed as a barometer system to pull money out of the system on the books so the balloon won't blow up when they pump it up, as this fellow sitting in the White House, the Islamic fella, has done. Printed more money than George Bush, and George Bush broke all the records. Well, I wanted to mention that. Martial law, apparently that's something that people are concerned about. Don't forget, martial law is the law of the city. It is the civil law. Civil law, just the Latin word for city law. It is the law of Babylon today. The law of Babylon in the form called the Code of Justinian, which has now been divided into the Code of Bismarck. The German form called the Code of Bismarck. The French form today called the Code Napoleon. And then it comes in a few other forms, the canon law of the Roman Church. But those three, by those three, almost every country in the world is controlled. Almost every country except the handful of common law countries, five major ones, and then their protectorates. England, the United States, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and the countries that are connected to them. Places like former British Honduras, known today as Belize, the Cayman Islands, places like that. But we have in these countries, we're not under the law of the city, so we're not under martial law. It would be a big change for us to be under martial law. And the way to keep martial law, one of the ways, among many, but I want to mention this one, to keep martial law from dominating us, one of our defenses is to make sure that our common law courts stay open. Make sure our common law courts stay open. Now, if people rise up locally in their counties, in their county courthouses, and they say, we're not shutting down these courts if it ever comes to that, they're going to be judges. They're going to go along with them. As a matter of fact, I've read the writings of some of those judges. They're waiting. They know they're going to have to make a choice, just like some high-ranking general officers in our military system are thinking about making a choice if they're ordered to go to war with Russia. What is our job in the meantime of all this? Us folk down here on the lower rungs, us the unwashed masses, as the evil empire calls us, what are we to do? We are to do individually what God tells us to do, and anything less will be destruction. Period, in the paragraph. When it comes down to the rubber hitting the road, it comes down to the brass tacks. If we don't have it in our heads that we serve the true lawgiver and not some phony baloney punk someplace who's on drugs or drunk half the time, most world leaders, or a homosexual, a sodomite by some ilk, a pervert you wouldn't want to allow your children or grandchildren to get near. That's not who God's people are. And he demands more. He gives us a true law. And if we deny him as lawgiver, then we have no standard. It's just us coming up with our ideas of what we think is true, and we become our own gods. That won't work. One of the laws of nature is God, and it's a matter of the common sensibilities, sometimes called common senses, is the militia of the several states. And we find in the laws of nature is God, which is supportive, of course, of the laws of nature unwritten in the nature of things, the laws of nature of God, we find in the Bible that Moses, through whom God gave a written expression of his law to the nation Israel, we find that that fellow was afraid, right down to his toes, right down to the ground, trembling, as it were, in his boots, of the militia of the 12 tribes of Israel, and in desperation, he told God. God told him what to do. This is the record. And he said to God, he said to the God of all armies, the Lord of hosts, the Lord of hostiles, he said, you don't understand. There are over 600,000 armed men in the camp. That's the way it's supposed to be. That's the way God designed it. There's something beautiful about a man or a woman under the authority structure God has set for them. And there's something repulsive, repugnant, abominable about a man who doesn't appear like he's under anybody's authority, such as the creature that now sits in the White House. That's not attractive at all. And if someone thinks it is, their minds have been hijacked and they've become perverted. It's ugly. And there's nothing more beautiful than a man or a woman that pays homage to the God that made them and is in submission, a small mission, his own mission, her own mission, to the grand mission, the covenants, the trust settlements of God that he gave to mankind way back in the beginning. Let me get to the militia. American limited government under our Constitution is rooted in the Volkreich. The Volkreich. That's old Germanic language, old Anglo-Saxon and Anglo-Dane. Volkreich translates Volk, people, Reich, duty, the people's duty. What is your duty? You have a duty. It was given to you direct from God. Do it or die. Do these things and you shall live, he says. Don't do them and you shall die. What is your duty? Is that those fundamental rights given to you, bestowed upon you direct without any intermediary, no institution, no church, no government, no pope, no preacher, given to you direct from God by virtue of him having made you out of his holy imagination, called his image. He pictured you and he made you and he dropped on you duties. We call these rights. And that word right we use now is from that old Anglo-Saxon Germanic word, Reich. And it means, fundamentally has always meant, duty. I was taught, and courts even say this sometimes, that every right is accompanied by a duty. That's weak, and it's wrong. Every right is a duty, including the right to self-protection. Every man, every woman has a duty to preserve their life, or sometimes the lives of others, even at their own expense. But you have a duty, depending upon the relationship, whether it be your children, your wife, your husband. You have a duty to preserve life. And by the way, if you don't preserve your own and your ability to defend others, you can't defend anybody. And that's what the Second Amendment is all about. I'd like to discuss just briefly, I don't know how far we'll get, I won't talk too long, Lord willing. Discuss briefly the old Anglo-Saxons' Volkreich with respect to what they called the FYRD, F-Y-R-D, from which arises our militia clauses of our Constitution. Enemy attacked, whether it be locally, whether it be just upon one man or his family or his neighbors, or a state, a region, or a country, enemy attack almost always demands an answer. And that answer must be quick, and it must be sharp. And in old Anglo-Dane, Anglo-Saxon England, the Witan, that's the assembly of elders, in Latin called the Senate, it's a Latin word. We get a word senile from that, by the way. It means an older person. Doesn't mean they're all senile. I'm older myself. I like to think I'm not senile. But the Witan empowered the king to muster, the king of England, the king of the Anglo-Saxons, to muster the FYRD, F-Y-R-D. That is the militia of able-bodied men. He had the power to muster them for war in the case of an emergency without the consent of the elders, the Witan. By the way, Witan is from where we get our word white. That means the ones with white hair, the older fellows. The white-bearded ones, really, is what it means. Without their consent, he couldn't go to war. He could muster them. He could meet the attack that came quickly. But where time permitted at all, he required, or the Volkreich, the common law, required the consent of the elders before he commenced hostilities. Likewise, our constitutional custom empowers the President of the United States to mobilize forces for war, such as the militia of the several states. Mobilize them, we say now. In Anglo-Saxon England, they called it the FYRD fare, F-A-R-E. That means the militia a-goin', the militia a-goin'. Well, today, the president has the power to mobilize the militia of the several states, to use the language of our Constitution. He can do that if he thinks there's a threat, but traditionally and by law, if he has time and the circumstances permit, he must ask and receive from Congress of the United States a declaration of war. That's what our Constitution requires. Now, I know some men who I respect very much who differ with me on that point. But I believe the President, from the language of the Constitution, is duty-bound to ensure that the military forces are ever ready. Some of the standing forces, some of it's the militia. He has a duty toward the militia. even before he has called them out, to understand what in the dickens he's supposed to do when the time comes. According to whatever means, Congress provides by way of a code to govern the militia of the several states, and the militia clauses of our Constitution lay that responsibility delegated to the Congress of the United States. Now, it is true, as a matter of practice, that the President of the United States can mobilize and send our boys, and now, and I say this with horror, apparently our girls, to face ugly bullets pecking through the dust and shrapnel without the declaration of war. Certainly, blame their president since World War II has done so with a vengeance. It must stop. What are we gaining? We're bleeding for other people who do not have our best interest at heart. The militia, you see, is there and should be a line of defense that says, that has the power and the sensibility by their officers, chosen, by the way, not by the federal government, but by the states, preferably by the militia members themselves, and has the fortitude to say, no, we're not going to follow unlawful orders. It seems apparent to me now that the standing forces of the United States have not the fortitude. Their careers apparently mean too much for them. Of course, some of them are very young, can't be expected to do much else but follow orders. But there are plenty of them who ought to have the fortitude to say no. I met a fellow once who was commander of the American forces in South Korea. He was a general, and I asked him about his career, and he told me, I met him in South Carolina at a meeting, a political meeting. He was with, at the time, General Westmoreland, commander of the forces, American forces in Vietnam for years. I couldn't talk to General Westmoreland. He fulfilled that idea when I was talking about the word Senate. I think he just wasn't with it the way he used to be at that time. But this other fellow was, and he had been dismissed from his position. His career ended by Jimmy Carter because he refused to obey Carter's order to stand down after the North Koreans had hacked to death a detail of men sent into the demilitarized zone in 1976, 77, I forget the year, but they had gone out to trim the branches on a tree, a lone tree out in the middle of the barren demilitarized zone, and they were killed. And he had the troops on red alert, but he had that kind of gumption. Who's ever heard of him? If I said your name, you still wouldn't have heard of him, because people like that are played down. But God sees what people like that do, and he's pleased. And in the end, they will be the winners. But only upon the advice and consent of the Witan, that is, the Senate of the Anglo-Saxons, the elders, there's another good word that we understand, did Anglo-Saxon kings levy the Dane gold property tax for raising an army. And likewise, American presidents traditionally set before Congress their proposals for taxation to support military activities, and then Congress, holding the power of the purse, this is the way it's supposed to work, denies, consents, or modifies these proposals at its pleasure. But you see, the money-making machine called the Federal Reserve Bank, coupled with Congress, who actually prints the money, gives it that printing cost to the Federal Reserve Bank. They wave a wand over it, and all of a sudden it's worth whatever is written on it. It's a money-making machine, and now we've reduced the dollar bill to simply an entry in a computer. So really, the president ultimately doesn't have to ask Congress for anything to go to war. He does what he wants, and they print the money. Pays the soldiers. You got to pay them. The evil empire has to pay its people. The evil empire is not content to do what it does without security. Again, there should be the difference between us and them. I know it's a strong temptation. Jesus Christ himself was offered that temptation. You can read about it in the Gospels. The devil himself, old Scratch, came to him and offered it all to him, and all the security and all the power and all the glory. And he hadn't eaten for several days. He was fasting, 40 days as a matter of fact. His defenses were down. He didn't give in, fortunately, but it's up to us not to give in to security either. The Anglo-Saxons lived a close tribal life, and if things break down in this country, hope they never do, but if they do, they have in other European countries, well, not European, but in other countries in Europe, I should say. And we could be reduced pretty quick to living close to tribal life. Just us by ourselves, our neighbors, and if we're fortunate, they won't turn on us. But when people get hungry, who knows what will happen? And if there is no organization locally, things can get out of hand. Now, fortunately, here in America, we do have state governments. Unfortunately, on the other hand, those state governments are dependent entirely upon the Federal Reserve System for money. Most state governments, almost none of them, have taken steps to establish money, to coin money, to allow gold and silver to be paid into the state treasury to pay certain taxes. That's always been the tradition in America, and it should be done again. The thing that could hold us together is local government and these committees of safety. For that purpose, they're a very good idea, of course. Well, give me just a little more time. The principles of common law government from Britain found their way to the United States and into the United States Constitution after we'd been here for a good, better than 150 years, 175 years. We were a common law country. We had a constitution before a written constitution, and it was called the Common Law of England. We called that our constitution. And we took those principles and applied them to government in brief, compact draft. Those are the words of the Supreme Court of the United States, a compact draft of our common law of government. Both the Bible and our common law recognize that as long as the individual is free to arm and train himself in the use of weapons, his bearing of arms for defense of home, family, neighbors, and country remains an insurmountable safeguard against tyranny. Do not, said Nehemiah in the Bible, do not be afraid of them, that is, your enemies. Remember, the Lord, who is great and fearsome, and fight for your brothers, fight for your sons and your daughters, your wives and your home. Close quote. That's from the book of Nehemiah, chapter 4, verses 14. And according to the Bible, each local militia unit chooses its officers, according to the Bible. You can find that in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 20, verse 9, where Moses uses the verb, the Hebrew verb, pakad. And he uses it in the phrase, they shall make officers, speaking of them, that means the people, that is the phrase for the militia, to make officers to embrace the mustering of candidates, followed by inspecting, charging, and appointing an officer from those candidates for officership. And the power of appointment is inherent in the Hebrew word pagat. It includes the power of disappointment, that means the power to remove someone who has been appointed from office, and to punish that person. That's the power also, we talk of it in the Constitution of the United States, sometimes called impeachment. Now, the nation Israel, anciently, when they came out of Egypt, and never forget, our first fathers, Winston Churchill, called them the most biblical race of men that has ever lived. The most biblical race of men that has ever lived. He was speaking of that political party in England that defeated the King of England in war, in civil war, a party that took over Parliament in England called Puritan, the Puritan Party. They were a biblical race of men, says Winston Churchill, and from what I understand in history, the Puritans put the nation Israel to shame for following the standards of God. They were determined. And so when we talk about the militia of the several states, and if we really want to understand what informs our Constitution, we must examine the militia as our first fathers, the Puritans, understood it. And when they got here, the first thing they did, of course, was organize the militia as they understood it from their home country. And the militia as they understood it from their home country was fashioned upon the common law of England. I talked a while ago about the Ferd and the Ferd Fair, the militia going. Those things arose during the days were indeed put to writing and understanding very much during the reign of King Alfred the Great in the last half of the 9th century. King Alfred the Great was a biblicist of no mean degree. He's not called great for nothing. As a matter of fact, there's not another king or queen of England that the English people have ever called great. They're not quick to do that. It's part of their culture. But Alfred, he's great. Died at age 50. He was so committed to the Bible that he determined that he had to get it in writing, but he couldn't because English wasn't written in those days. So him and his Welsh monk, Asher, fashioned an alphabet and put it into writing so that he could record and other people in his own country could read. King Alfred said this, "A successful country relies upon three kinds of men, three. It relies upon, number one, working men, men who are willing and do work. Second, in order to have a successful country, that country must have fighting men, men willing to take up arms and fight, because the enemies will come. The enemies came against Alfred. The Danes invaded England and took over, eventually sat on the throne. He pushed back against them after he was decimated, driven to the wilds of Wales in hiding. His army was gone. Eventually, after a while, he was able to regroup them, and he pressed the Vikings back to the eastern shore, surrounded them against the shore, had them on their knees, and he told the king of the Vikings, the Danes, Jutes they were called in those days, he said, I have your sons as prisoners. And he said, I want them back. He said, I'll exchange them with you if you want to. I'll give you what you want of prisoners if you'll give me what I want. But under one caveat. And he said, what's that? He says, you must confess Christ as your Savior and your Lord of armies. And in those days, people understood, as they ought to today, to some degree. And this man, this king, this Danish king, this Viking, understood that God had had favor on the Anglo-Saxons. They had won in battle, and he said, that must be my God, because my God failed me in battle. And he became Christian, confessed the Messiah of God, received his sons back, and the Danish people that were in England, by the way, by the thousands by that time, they'd come to stay. They committed, and Alfred committed, they mixed their blood in marriage, they mixed their laws were the same already. The Danes coming strengthened the laws of the Anglo-Saxons because the Anglo-Saxons had grown soft during the days of Roman occupation. And they had taken the imprint of Rome, by the way. And the Danes strengthened the common law, the rights to property. They became Christian, and they became an integral part of our common law. The Volksrecht was their law also, but only better and stronger than the watered-down version that Alfred was trying his best to reinstitute by the laws of King Alfred. Well, the Danes enabled that. enabled it to happen all over. These are part of our history that have made us what we are, and without them we would not be what we are. But the militia of the several states was solidified into an understandable form with the invasion of the Vikings and the mixing of their blood and the reinforcement of their sense of our common law, of limited, by the way, limited government. And the Bible at that time then undergirded it. They spoke a similar language, the Danes and the Anglo-Saxons, both of those, all three of those tribes, from about the same part in Europe. They spoke the same Germanic speech. And King Alfred's, what's called the laws of King Alfred, our common law, the Volkreich, was something that they were able to take upon themselves and make stronger. Well, our Constitution, Article 1, Section 8, recognizes the common law militia. And the Second Amendment and our common law both recognize the duty of each militia member to furnish two things: his own arms and training and discipline of their use. That's an ancient tradition. It's still part of our law. As a matter of fact, it is the supreme law of the land that that happen. Because if the government provides weapons, as people often hold up Switzerland, but that's not a common law system, although they have a good thing going there with their militia. Their arms and their training are not the responsibility of each member, as our law would demand. And therefore, their arms then, some would say the government has ultimate control over them. But it is true, from what I understand also, that once a person has been a member of the militia in Switzerland, the rifle he has issued, when he is old enough to not have to muster anymore, he takes that rifle with him. Now, whether or not he retains title to it, I've never been able to discover it, but he certainly has possession, probably, in case of a national emergency. Well, next time we'll continue with how the militia discourages invasion and enables freedom and security. It's the only thing, by the way, the militia of the several states, as our common law has given it to us through the Constitution of the United States, is the only possible way to have freedom and security at the same time. There is no other way, and that's why the Second Amendment says that, he uses the word, by the way, security. It's the only place in our Constitution the word security occurs. And the security of a state, one of the several states in freedom, can only occur, according to the Second Amendment, when the militia, the protection, when the Constitution, the law, protects the duty of the militiaman to keep himself forever ready, and that means well-regulated, forever ready, and armed. Well, Gerard, I'm about talked out. I guess that's enough for tonight. Appreciate it.
Well, that was good. I dare say that this is a civics course, because this is all about your relationship, man's relationship to their government. And that's one thing that we're not getting in America today, is that course in civics of what our relationship to our government is. And you certainly have put much of that into perspective by this talk. So I'm going to go ahead and open up the queue if anybody has any questions to Brent directly on the things that he spoke about, and then we'll move on to the, when that's done, to the regular open mic. So that was pretty interesting, and you know, if you don't know those things, how do you defend them? You know?
Well put.
So, let's see.
And we, no matter who we are, we know to learn more.
Yeah, there's not a day go by that you can't learn something, that's for sure. And I learn something every day in many different ways in many different areas. But I'm always prepared to learn. Okay. I'm going to go ahead and open up the first questioner. It looks like California Jeremiah. Go ahead.
Hi, Brent.
Hi,
Gerard. Natural law is most effective, from what I've read, And I'm sure from what I can gather, right, just from the basic reasoning position, being able to reason, natural law is a, like you said in some previous calls, Brent, a gap filler. What has to be, what is that thing that has to be removed that kind of creates a gap in order for natural law to come in? What is in effect doing the work of what natural law would ordinarily do before the, you know, what makes us a civilized society, I guess, is my question.
Well, I'm really appreciate the question because it gives me an opportunity to address some things. You brought some things up. And I hope also, of course, I hit the nail on the head with your question. The word civilization is a word of city law government. Civil. Civil is the Latin word for city. The civil law is the city law. The word civilization was coined by a Scotsman during the Scottish Enlightenment, and it became very popular. That hasn't been that long ago. The word civilization, the use of it, is fairly new. But I like to call it just a free country and freemanship instead of citizenship, because citizen is also the same root from the word civil, which talks about being a member of that fraternal order of some city and entering the fraternal order of the city for your protection. The city law, civilization, city law. For me, it's important that we pay attention to words. Although I realize we even have the word citizen, I think, in the Constitution, or it's in our constitutional law. Our Puritan forefathers would have recoiled at the use of such words. They wouldn't use the word citizen. They, in their thinking, most of them, like to use the word freemanship. But the natural law, I think we get too complicated. Here's why we get too complicated about natural law, and people differ. For instance, it is the official doctrine of Rome, the Roman Church. The official doctrine is the writings of Saint, who they call Saint Thomas Aquinas. His name was Thomas. He's popularly called, his doctrines are called Thomism or Thomism. And those doctrines are the doctrines of also fundamentally rabbinicism, modern rabbinicism, and modern Islam. All three arose at the same time. All three were entered Europe by three men who were contemporaries and likely knew one another. And they put reason above facts. That's what Thomism does. That's what we would be more familiar with St. Thomas Aquinas because of our Christian heritage, or at least the semblance of it through Rome before the Reformation. Thomism, the writings of St. Thomas Aquinas, talk about natural law. And it is the official doctrine of Rome that natural law, according to St. Thomas Aquinas, natural law is the law of nature as it is expressed in the Code of Justinian. And I'm not stretching it when I say that. The Code of Justinian is the law of Rome. The city law of Babylon ultimately codified its first principles. And scholasticism, that's what Thomism is, sometimes it's called scholasticism. That is what St. Thomas Aquinas and others call the natural law. What is natural law? It is reason. Reason. It is the Code of Justinian, which is called the Logos, the highest form of reason, higher even than the written word of God. That is not natural law. And I find that the educated class in America, and even in the West, do not understand that. They do not understand that natural law is not what St. Thomas Aquinas and Rome says it is. Well, what is it then?
I appreciate that. No, I do appreciate that distinction. Yeah. But let's bring us back on track here, that the actual question more relates to, I mean, you were filling in a lot of history there, and you gave us a lot of great information, so thank you for that. But with regard to the gap that you mentioned,
yeah,
what is that caused from? How do we end up with a gap?
Well, I don't remember mentioning a gap, so I'm trying to fill in the gap here.
Okay. The gap refers
I don't remember.
To,
yeah. What did you?
The what? Gap refers You're... to. Go ahead.
No, do you remember what context I used that in? I don't remember using
it. I do.
Okay.
I do. It is, you use it in the sense that natural law would somehow, there's a void that gets created when things kind of go awry with the common law.
Oh, I see what you're saying maybe a little. Let me try this. Our common law only speaks to the real cases and controversies. I'm quoting our Constitution. Our Constitution says that in the federal courts, of course, that's a common law tradition. In the federal courts even, you can't get into court unless you have a real case and controversy. What that means is the federal courts have no jurisdiction over hypotheticals. Well, what if this, this, and this? Can you tell me, Judge, what would happen? The Supreme Court of the United States and all the federal courts have said, no, we're not going to tell you. We're throwing that one out. Unless you can bring a real case and controversy, what does that mean? That means you've got a bloody plaintiff. Bloody plaintiff. That means somebody's really been injured. They've lost a lot of money. They've lost a limb. They've lost a life. They've lost a business relationship. They've lost something. Some tort has been, some wrong has been perpetrated against them, and they have been, to use the words of our common law, damaged. And you have to claim even today. I think when I was in law school, you had to claim at least $10,000 of damage just to get into a federal court. Well, then it went to $50,000, and I think now it's well over $100,000. That's how quick inflation has destroyed us, and that hasn't been that long ago. I mean, my lifetime. But what I'm saying is you've got to have a bloody plaintiff. Well, that means this as in relation to the gap. We don't know what's out there. The common law is unknown without a real case and controversy until you engage, and then there's a decision by a jury to put it in its fundamental form. We don't even know what it is. The common law only arises, can only be known when there's an adversarial process, a real fight. Well, the law of the city is not that way. And those maybe that's the gap you're talking about. We don't know what God would want us to do. You see, in the common law tradition, we say we have findings. We find. We look for what it is
right.
that God has established. And that's what we're looking for. Is that the gap you're talking about?
Brent,
yep.
the gap that I'm referring to really is the positive law. What we call positive law, from my research, there's a thing called positive law, and it's enacted statutes by Congress, and constitutions as well. In civil law countries and in common law countries, positive law is pretty much the same thing. The difference, I think, between common law countries and civil law, though, is that the common law has case law. That's also positive law. The natural law that you were referring to is something that fills in the gap when the positive law is not working. Now, I wasn't hoping you would speak to that.
I see what you're saying a little bit. Back to positive law. There have been men, I think I did mention this once, I don't know what context, and I recommended a book. A book was written by the man that wrote Moby Dick. Moby Dick, written by Herman Melville. Well, discovered under his among his papers, decades after he passed away, in the 1920s, quite a while after he passed away, was a manuscript of a short story he had never published called Billy Budd, Sailor. Billy Budd, Sailor, B-U-D-D. And it was a story about positive law. And Herman Melville's father-in-law was chief, his name was Shaw, I believe. He was chief justice of the Massachusetts Supreme Court. And his father-in-law was a positivist. That means a hardcore positivist says, I don't know what the law is until some kind of legislation or decree comes from government. But as a matter of common law, I would not say that court opinions and court findings are positive law. No. Positive law is statutes, regulations, and decrees. Executive orders, for instance. Whatever you call them, many words have been used. I've gone to the Bible and tried to work down the Hebrew words used in the Old Testament and in the Newer Testament. Words for ordinance and statute and judgment. And there are, what happens with these words, they all refer to the same thing. Torah is the big one. That includes everything. But they all refer to the same idea. But each one of those words stress a different aspect of positive law or other kind of law, but we're talking about positive law now. Positive law, it's a fancy word. I wish we'd get rid of it. It means that which has been placed by man, posited, positioned. There's a word. It is law that has been positioned by man, not by God, by man. And we have said the Code of Justinian, for instance, is positive law, and every statute Congress passes and the state legislatures pass is positive law. Now, the difference between a common law country, one of the fundamental differences, one of the ways you can see the difference, a common law country and a civil law country is this when it comes to positive law. In a civil law country, the law of the city, which is almost every country on the face of our planet, the Code of Justinian rules almost all of them, or Sharia law, in every one of those countries, it is against the law. It is against their tradition. It is against their culture, their custom, to ever refer to a court opinion as authority. That's one of the hallmarks of the law of the city. Why? Because in every case, the judges are to come back to the specific language of the code, the positive law, parse it, and reapply it again without looking to how it was applied before. Because why? Because the Code of Justinian is reason, divine, perfected. There's nothing higher. I'm not exaggerating. That's their attitude. Now, in America, we have more positive law. Listen to me close on this. We have more positive law in America probably than any country in the world, including all those civil law countries. But the difference is this. When a statute comes up to be interpreted in court in its application, or a decree or a regulation, oftentimes, the statute, decree, or regulation is never mentioned. You get appeals and court battles, and the lawyers will never talk about it. What will they talk about? They'll talk about all the court opinions that have interpreted it. I can show you, and this is fascinating, this is the difference. I can show you court opinions concerning the statute of frauds. I'm stressing the word statute. Statute of Parliament, originally. That came to the United States and almost every state, I think every state in the Union, has passed a statute of frauds. It's almost just like the one the Parliament passed. But when you go to read a court battle, the opinions over statute of frauds, you'll see more court opinions about what courts say about how it's to be interpreted than you will any language from the statute of frauds. The point is this. In a common law country, I don't care how many statutes there are. The courts are independent of the other branches of government. That's not true in a civil law country. Every judge is dependent for his pay and his job. He's a civil servant. He's not a lawyer even. He's a civil servant trained to that position. And he's dependent on the government. And if he doesn't follow the statute, yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Let me jump in. So I know you got other questions, Brent, so thank you very much for taking my question there, okay? And so lastly, I think that, again, this is Jeremiah here in Northern California, Donaldson on TalkShoe. But I think from my own readings that the natural law, right, is something that, yeah, the militia has the ability to kind of incarnate the energy, you know, of natural law because they have the ability to look out for, you know, the individual, you know, person through their own community directly. It's like direct participation in your government. Now, that's what we have in a Republican government is the ability to participate directly. So it's not too far-fetched to think that, you know, everyone can join the militia, void of course, minors, incompetence and vagabonds.
We don't join the militia. We are the militia. Me to think in those terms, the paradigm has to shift. We don't join the armed forces. We are the militia. We are armed or unarmed, in jail, exiled. We are the militia. The government cannot get rid of us, and that's why the militia is. It's not something that can incarnate it. It is the embodiment, to use an Anglo-Saxon word instead of incarnate. It is the embodiment that allows this direct participation. A republic does not allow direct participation. That's indirect participation. That's why we call it a republic. That's indirect.
Okay, so I'm wrong on that. Okay.
Well, I don't know that you're thinking wrong. I wouldn't say that. I just know the words we use are important. And we need to be careful and try to tune into etymology and say no.
Here's a great question for you. Can a non-citizen join a county militia to help support
A non-citizen does not join the county militia. The non-citizen that's in the county at common law for over 40 days is the militia, period, regardless of where he's from or what his status is otherwise. Because if you're living there and you're staying there. Yeah, if he's there, and at the common law, if you're in the county or in the hundred, the township, for 40 days, you had a duty to enroll and put your name so they could muster you in if the militia had to be called up.
Okay, thanks a lot, Brent and Gerard.
Okay, yeah, thank you.
Are you muted, sure. Gerard?
I'm not hearing anybody. I don't know if Gerard's there.
Yeah, he brought up caller.
What I was going to say is I'm talking to myself. I'm having a good time too.
Okay.
I think that exchange between you and Jeremiah, it's a duty as an American. The militia. You don't just join it. You have a duty, right?
Right. Yeah, it's who you are. Either you feel your duty or you don't. It's like I am a son of my father, whether I want to be or not, and either I'm a son that feels my duty to my father and honors him, or I'm not. That doesn't change my status. I still have the duty.
Right. You don't get to pick your status.
That's right. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
That's good, Gerard. Yeah.
Anyway, I'm sorry. We got California. It looks like Don. You've been unmuted. And so have I. Go ahead.
Hello, Gerard. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
I just have a hypothetical, but if Nasara were to be announced on the 1st of October, what would NLA's plan be? I mean, would you step right into the courthouses with your directors in each county, or what would take place, or is there a plan as such?
While you say Nasara, explain Nasara. Explain that, because people don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, wow. We are in trouble. Nasara is the National Economic and Security and Restoration Act. It means we're republic now, which internationally we are recognized as a republic as of the G20 conference.
Well, look, we've always been a republic, and we are what we are now. You know.
Wait a minute. I know. The USA was a registered corporation in Puerto Rico in, 1791. Well, Puerto Rico went bottoms up, and all the corporations that were there went bottom up, too, including the Federal Reserve. But we already have a president of this republic, and I'm just wondering if NLA has made any plans or talked to anybody to make this switch over as quick and as possible, because it has to be done. We're going to be a common law republic, and we need our courthouses back, and need the sheriff to support us, and so that's what I'm concerned about. But the fact when you said you weren't aware of Nasara, are you aware of GSARA?
No. What I'm saying is most of the people listening don't necessarily know what Nasara means like that. That you have to spell it out.
Okay.
We haven't been talking about that over the weeks and months. But the fact is all we have to do is what we've already instituted. What we're going to do. We need to be ready to bring our administrators into the court. And that system that was here I don't give any credibility to that fiction that you talk about has went bottom up. They need to go bottom up. They were never rightfully in power in the first place. So
yeah.
we need to reset back to what the idea of this country is. We're not recreating anything. We're instituting those principles that they have left through this corporate crap that they put over us. So, yeah, are we ready? I don't think we're ready. I mean, do we have four administrators for every county? We got a lot of catching up to do. If the
yeah,
SAR comes in,
it concerns me because we could have acting directors of the counties that are short, and there's directors that could go from one county to the other for the service, but it needs to be established real quick if this does happen.
Well, I think what's going to happen is the people are going to do what they do best, and that is to rise to that occasion. Look, you're going to have some people that can, and they're going to take the burden on their shoulder, and they're going to help multiple counties. Until look, there's a whole education process that has been a void because, like I was talking about, people don't get taught civics. They don't understand the relationship between the government, and that's part of our job here. Now, it's not going to take very much time to catch up, I don't think, because, you know, common law, common sense, it makes sense. It's all been done before. The writings are all there. It's very easy to put it back in place and say, this is, you know, what we're going to do. Look, some of us are going to have to become consultants, I guess you could say.
Yeah,
who
I
will
understand.
And we have discussed that. And John has written plans out for that we've discussed on the top here a little bit. But it was putting the cart before the horse because, you know, look, you can't give people meat when they're not ready for meat. They need milk. So that's what we've been doing. You know, you got to give them the milk until the teeth come out and they can eat the meat, you know. So if it should come through, I think we'll, you know, with the all the massive writings, and we're not the only group that understands this process. And the people are really not, you know, you empower the people, they'll rise to the occasion. You know, like Jefferson said, if you don't think the people are ready, don't take it away from them. Educate them. And they're going to learn quick because I'm telling you, when you run the country the proper way, you know what happens? Prosperity happens. And that's very
easy. Yeah, right. That is going to happen. All the countries are revaluing their currencies. It's going to be prosperous times, but this actually started in heaven, not just with governments. But anyway, you answered my question, and I thank you for your time.
You're welcome. So, yeah, I think it'll take care of itself in that respect, and I don't know. We can hope. And anyway, next caller, you've been unmuted. I don't know. Give me your name and your state. I have nothing on my board to tell me that.
Gerard, this is Alan. I'm from North Carolina.
Okay, hi.
So, back to the, seems to be the, was the main thing for tonight in a way, is this issue of what's going to happen on the 27th, 28th, or 30th, or whatever. I mean, we know that there's no...
You know what? Get back in the queue. I put my cursor over that, and it knocked the queue out. Get back in there, and I'll open you back up. I'm sorry. You were talking about...
Okay, he's back.
Okay. Go ahead. Anybody
so
else
there...
that was in there, go ahead and get back. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so modern technology. There's no way that we can continue at $19 trillion and growing rapidly. So whether it happens at the end of this month or not, it's just a matter. It's going to happen. It's just a split there what somebody says. But, of course, we all have opinions, but I don't think there's any fact that we could ever point to and go back to as far as this year that there's going to be, if I understood that right, the last comment said that we're going to have economic recovery, I guess you'd say, or whatever from that terminology, and I don't see it at all. But if the banks goes down, then, I mean, it's going to be, or money goes down, banks are going to go down, and it's going to be chaos. And we don't have the type of people that we had in our nation before where we bartered from one another or whatever. Most people don't have anything except for enough for the next meal, and sometimes not even that. They have no, you know, money. So if the banks shut down in a holiday mode, then they don't have even cash money to try to deal with, much less gold or gold coins or something of that nature. So, I mean, it's chaos when you don't prepare. When you go, I've served 23 years of Marines, and to keep from chaos happening with the troops, then you plan, you prepare, and you train and run it all through again, so everybody knows what they're going to do. But you know, we're not even set up for any aspect of this, and so I think we're just running short, you know, and not putting out enough and making sure that we come together with a firm hard plan how we could work this thing out. And it's, you know, I think we're just really, as they say, behind the cue ball here.
You're not gonna get out of this without a whole lot of elbow grease, so to speak, because there is gonna be that vacuum, and it's gonna be up to the American people to rise to that occasion. The last depression, half the country was farmers. And that's one of the things that saved us, because there were so many farms. People could go out to the farms and earn their living and earn their bread, you know, so to speak. Now we have all these multinational farms. But that doesn't mean that can't happen again. And what the other fellow was talking about is this reset back to gold and silver money, which it's going to be hard in the beginning, because you're going to have to allow some local money. It won't be only money that's stamped by the Treasury. And, you know, you're going to have to rely on some local barter. Now, I don't know what's going to happen in the cities and all that, but, you know, the main thing is that everybody gets fed and order is kept. Once you give the resources back to the people and allow people to own the land, the whole idea of owning the land, the law of the land, is that if you had a piece of land that was your own, you could scratch out your existence on it. And if you didn't want to pay taxes, you just didn't participate in the activity, and they weren't supposed to be able to tax your land away from you. Just these few ideas coming back into effect would raise people up to the challenge of becoming independent. And I think it could happen. Look, we have more resources, more arable land that we're not using, and more technology right now. There's no reason, just because the Federal Reserve note fails, that we can't come up with a system in order to deal with each other. Now, what may happen is we may end up being shut out of the international scene in a certain respect. I don't know how that's going to work. I don't pretend to know that stuff. But you can't tell me that we don't have resources in this country that we can deal between each other and even come up. Look, they used to pay the troops in chits. They used to the IOUs, and it worked. You know what I mean? So I don't pretend to have all the answers. I just know that we should be resourceful enough, and we should have enough integrity so that a handshake can once again be a handshake. You know, all this digital money that's not even in existence, that's not even in print. I mean, nobody should be sleeping at night thinking about this. This is what we have now is a form of schizophrenia, is what it is. And what they want us to do is fear it going away. That somehow, if that all that money that they never printed that's in digital form goes away, that gravity will cease to exist and we'll all fly off the earth and everything. That's not true. It's not true. We have a lot of resources, and if we apply them right, we'll get through it. And there's nobody more resourceful than Americans, especially when the government leaves us alone and leaves us to our own doings, so between each other, and to have a free economy. Look at, I don't know, you know, you say nobody has anything, but maybe they do. You know, when all we don't, the trouble with this country right now, the reason we're in such bad shape is we've allowed them to talk us into this system where everything is just-in-time shipping and just-in-time that. We have nothing on the shelves. Our factories have closed. We don't make anything anymore. You know, so we're going to be dependent on bringing stuff in from another country. And what's that? How's that going to happen? I'm not sure. But I know that we have plenty of resources. I know we have plenty of things that other countries want. I know that, that China loves our land and they love the resources that are here. That's what Hillary Clinton and them have promised them. Well, guess what? That's our wealth, and we can turn it into wealth. We just can't let these guys give our heritage away by making deals and stuffing money in their pockets like they have been all these years. There's plenty of stuff out there, and there's plenty of technology out there that's going to – that if we – take control of this thing and we don't let it degrade into chaos. You see, they want chaos, I think. I don't think they want a soft landing. They always knew this dollar was going to fail. You can't borrow yourself into prosperity like they've been telling us for the past 40, 50 years. It's impossible. It was an exercise in insanity to begin with. And that's the first thing we have to realize. So, you know, how it's going to take shape, you know what? I think that's up to you and me in between, in our relationship together, and put our thinking caps on and come up with creative ways. So,
yeah, but
I don't know.
Yeah, I love you, Gerard, but we can't, you know, it seemed like we're always wanting to be reactive instead of proactive. But, I mean, I agree with everything you said to a degree if everything was like it ought to be, but it ain't. I mean, that's a fancy world anymore. Our government's not going to turn things back over to people. I mean, and we can look at what they've already done from Baltimore, even here in Charlotte, and down at Katrina, and had the people cooped up in bleachers and inside ball thing, and wouldn't let them out, and taking guns from citizens. And I mean we need to see where we at, be realistic about it, and we've got to come up with a plan. Like I said, I think we're going to have to give up our country and try to save some areas to where you know, we can grow from out of that. But
I don't think that we're going to plan all that out, because I don't think it's possible to plan it out. I think certain of it is God's good providence. Look at whatever happened in Katrina, whatever this government did, was because the people were compliant and they're self-policing and they're sheep. And that will fall away in a day. I'll tell you right now, if there was another Katrina tomorrow, do you think those people would give up their guns? They learned a big lesson from that. I have a lot more faith in humanity probably than you do. I mean, look, we learn things the hard way. And that was a hard lesson. This government that you're talking about that's been doing all this stuff, they're a minority. I said we outnumber them 800-1. And the rest of the world, they're fed up with them too. We're not doing this alone. Look, there's other people out there that want the common law freedom that we have. And I'm telling you, they're fed up with this baloney, all of them. You're gonna see alliances between these nations that they've been telling us are our enemies. And all of a sudden, you're going to see things coming out of those countries, because everybody, look, in this day of communication and mass communication and information, the internet's full of baloney. Well, let me tell you something. The internet is full of a lot of good stuff, too. And there's one thing that happens on the internet that doesn't happen on the managed news media. When somebody puts baloney out there, the next day there's 10 people saying it's baloney. And you at least can read it and make up your own mind. When you get a newscaster that comes from Rupert Murdoch's corporation, and he gets up there, and somebody like Dan Rather says, "Oh, and you know, the president talks for 3 hours. I love Jimmy Carter when he talked. He didn't say anything. He talked in circles, and then Dan Rather would spend an hour afterwards telling you what he said, and nobody ever commented and said, you know what, Dan, you're full of crap, because that's not what he said. Actually, he said nothing. He contradicted what he said in the beginning by the time he got to the end." But you see, that happens on the internet, and I have faith that as long as we can maintain that communication, that's the key, that we can keep communicating, that these things will work out. And this government you're talking about, it's self-policing, and it's a minority of people running it. It's a small faction that we need to get rid of. And the people that just want the security, like Brent was talking about, they just want a job. Well, those people still just want a job. So when it comes down to it, when we put the right principles in place, they're going to do their job for us this time. They're going to function the way they're supposed to function when we become the leaders that we need to be. We're like the Marine Corps, man. We only need a few good men. That's what we need, a few good men. We need a remnant. We need a few good men that can get up, step up to the plate, articulate, become the leaders that they need to be, and you'll be surprised what happens. I don't think we need to micromanage everything and come up with a plan to fit everything, because I don't think that you could possibly do it. You see, that's like planning, city planning and zoning and all this other stuff that they try to do to foresee, you know, and pretend like they know the future and they know the economy in the future. And generally speaking, they're screwing it all up, and they're closing doors that they don't even know they're closing that you should be opening, because they're trying to take on a power that they don't have to look into the future and micromanage things. Look, you don't need to worry for tomorrow. You need to get your fundamental principles down, so when a situation comes up, you have a guideline on how to deal with that situation. Everything that Brent said tonight about how that law operates, look, it doesn't have to be written, it doesn't have to be preconceived, but it's going to fit into a parameter of a fundamental principle that we can live by or die by if necessary. That's the difference. And I don't, you know, these people that are running things, these schizophrenic things, people, I don't think that any of them are willing to die for what they believe in, because they value their life, this life, over anything. Over you, over me, over anything, because they have nothing else but that, and the power that they can get in this life. So I don't want to beat the subject to death, but I think that we're going to have a lot of resources when we free up the technology and we take these corporate entities out of it that have locked it down for their profit, you know, and let the people go ahead and do what they do best in America. So, I mean, look, we have the plan, the committees of safety, with the sheriffs, the common law. Take a look, that institutes the law that we live by. I don't care if I'm spending quarters or I'm trading you 22 bullets for quarters. We're going to figure out what it is that each community has, and we're going to work that out. And I believe we can. Now, are people going to suffer to the degree that we become human again, that we live under those laws that God has given us, that it's up to us how much suffering we go through, you know, and that we don't become greedy and we don't become envious and revengeful. That's, you know, can we do it? I don't know. You're right. Everything is pretty bleak right now, and most of that is our doing. Look, we're reaping what we've sown. We let them take over our schools. We've let them raise our children. We sit in front of the boob tube and they program us. They call it programming for a reason. Look, we're all afraid, oh, they're going to shut the internet down. They're going to shut the grid down. It'd be the best thing for us in the long run. Think about it. And you say, oh, we got to shut down areas of the country. Look, if it gets that bad, they're going to shut down anyway. There'll be massive death. And anybody that survives, guess what? They're going to be one mean, green fighting machine, aren't they? So I don't know how it's going to go. I mean, it's our goal to keep it as civil and as possible. But that, you know, there's certain men that you're going to have to get rid of. look at the Pharaoh wouldn't let the people go. He had all kinds of plagues, and he hardened his heart. You're going to see that happen again. There's nothing new under the sun here. Men are the same as they've always been. We're motivated by the same thing. Remember that song, a kiss is still a kiss, a smile is still a smile as time goes by? Well, guess what? That's true. And so once you know what those principles are, you can pretty much tell what a man's going to do in a certain situation based on his principles. So that's all I can say about it. I don't know that we can actually put a plan in place that's going to fit all situations in all places. That's what's nice about your committees of safety, because they operate on a local level. Look, I don't want to live. People in California have different things that they need and do than I do. Look, I up here, I need wood for the winter. You know, you live in Southern California. That's not your worry, is it? So how could I go over there and run California? I'm thinking about wood for the winter, and it's not even an issue over there. The local people will take care of the local issues, but we have to allow and facilitate that happening. That's the trouble with the federal government running everything, because they really can't possibly know, like they want us to think they do, what's good for everybody, that we can't think for ourselves, so to speak. So I don't know. I hope I answered your question. I don't know that there's an actual answer for your question. I think we have to have faith in who we are, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Go ahead.
Well, it's just like I said, I have, I guess, a different view of what's where we're at as far as America and what we're going to end up being, because I just don't see many people as many of thinking that we're going to, in that word, be reset. And if it was really truly a reset, then I'd agree that would be a great thing. But I don't see this as a reset. Like I said, the chaos that I've seen in the cities and I saw in Charlotte, North Carolina, is that we've got among us, we got millions of people who are not of the same belief that we are. They believe in an absolute fairyhood of a god, but yet they're totally devoted to this god Allah and willing to die for that and waiting for chaos to happen, or else they create the chaos. And that's what was going on in Charlotte. Is the Muslims was a big part of what was going on there, and I saw that in these other cities as well. So, when a man gets in power, he's not willing to let loose, and so that's where our government is. And I'm afraid we always will have these people who's concerned about their retirement and their money, and we had many generals. And all branches who were not quite yes men, but yet when their neck was put on the line and told them to retire, or you're going to lose your retirement, and they was, they took the retirement and got out instead of calling the shot just like it is and defending our country through their ability that they had. But there again, we have let the Constitution just be totally desecrated, and nobody's willing to stand, and we won't do according to the, and I believe, the principles of the Declaration of Independence, where we file actions in the court and move on to the next step to alter to the government before we even have to abolish it, which, like I said, we've got so many people in power and so many foreigners in our country now. I just don't have the same outlook, I guess, that you do. I just see that it's time for our whipping, and mentioning Israel. I mean, they got their whipping for 70 years in other times, and stuff before they had a, if we want to call that word again, a reset. So it's not going to,
Well, look, you're right. Look, I don't know where it can go. You, what do? You prepare for the worst, you hope for the best. and we're to look at God's people have always fought from a remnant and from their back, so to speak, and the reason for that is because man is a prideful creature, and if we ever won anything thinking we did it on our own, then we'd be back to square one again. So men have to be brought all the way down to the bottom before they can crawl back up to the top. And when they have a victory like that, they have to give it to their God, because to believe that we could have done it on our own, we've proven time and time again that when we're left to our own devices, we run off with those banal things that men tend to put above other men and above God himself. So I don't know, look at, there could be the balkanization of America. If we break down into a civil war, I don't think we'll ever get back to where the things that we lost. We may have areas that survive that are a true republic, but it's not going to be the United States as we know it today. You might have different states breaking down into different countries and things like that, and there'll be certain areas that you won't dare go into, but the whole thing is going to flush out along certain lines. It has to. It's like when you break the dam and the water comes over, eventually it all trickles down and finds the low spots and everything equals out, and then you have what you have, and then things go from there. Where are we? We're not in a good situation for sure, but it's not as bad as you think it is, because we don't really know what the big picture is, because we can't, because they don't tell us what the big picture is. I'm telling you that we have something here that the rest of the world still envies. If it's nothing more than an idea of freedom, and that's all we have, because I think that's what it is. The reason that we've gone this long is because we believe that we're free, and they haven't been able to stifle that from us yet. And they've worked on it, and they're pretty close. But of course, they're at that brick wall again. Like you said, look at this, financial collapse has to happen, because you can't have a gross national product that's down on the floor and a debt that's up in the sky. And you hit a brick wall there. Obviously, something has to be done, and it was always a question of not if but when, and now we're at the when. I think we're at the when, and I think everybody knows it. And what's going to, like you said, these men that are in there, they're not going to give up power. However, I'll tell you one thing they're going to do. They're going to start turning on each other. And I think that's happening already. You're going to see this snake eating the tail. And then you're going to also see other countries that have America is not kindly viewed around the world, and rightfully so. Rightfully so, because some of the stuff that we have done to the rest of the world, not we, the people, but the American corporation under the guise of we, the people. And I think that many of these nations, many of these people, they understand that. They understand what America was supposed to stand for. I mean, look, we've had people from other countries, they flocked over here. I think I got more Russians in this community that came over. They're disgusted because they see us degrading down into what happened into Russia. And they know that story. It's an old familiar story. They know more about the Constitution and freedom than the average American does when you talk to them, because they've schooled themselves and they have it in their chest. So who are the people that are going to rise up? Who are the people that are out there? Who are the hillbillies out there? And who are the country folk? And who are the ones that are educating themselves? And even our young people are fed up with, we think that they got the younger generation locked down. They failed the younger generation, and the younger generation is not stupid. They understand that there's no future for them. And there's our answer. And those are the things that are going to rise up that you and I can't possibly even fathom right now. And it's up to us to have this conversation. Look, we're still here talking about this. In other nations, this would have been shut down a long time ago. Look, it looks like we're going to go to the bloody end with this NLA and this business of being online and talking. And the longer they let us talk and the longer we can communicate, the better off we're going to be. And so that's the plan. Keep communicating. Keep the lines open. Like Brent said, keep the courts open. Those guys that retired because they didn't want to lose their pensions and stuff, look at There was no way that they could stand up at that time and have any hope of success. What they're waiting for is they're waiting for you, and they're waiting for me. And those guys that even retired will come back out of retirement because they know what to do. They have the skills. And who do they fear the most? They fear retired military men, don't they? Who are they attacking? They're attacking the retired military guys because they know that they know the art of warfare, and they know how to organize, and they know how to teach. And so I don't think they're going to prevail because I know how the story is going to end. The guys with the white hats have to win, right? Darkness can't outdo the light. And so, I mean, I know I'm pontificating here, but basically a lot of what's going on is due to the psyops that our enemy has used on us to make us depressed, to make us believe that we can't rise over these things. And I don't say that there's not going to be death and destruction, but I don't want to focus on death and destruction, because if you're focusing on the death and destruction, you're not going to see the solutions to that. And we need to be making solutions every day. Now, where are you going to apply your solutions? Oh, yes, we're going into the courts, we're doing this, we're doing that. But the only way that's going to work is if we're working our solutions simultaneously on the local level. Where are you most effective? You're most effective in your community because you know your community. You should know the people in your community. You should be having dialogue with your community. Look, at you fix your backyard first. You don't go out and try to fix the world when your backyard's a mess. So if we all get together and start fixing our own backyards, the big picture is going to take care of itself. You know, fix your own soul. Let's get right with God. Let's get right with our neighbor, and let's see where it goes. You'll see miracles happen. I'm telling you, you have to believe it. If you can't believe it, it won't happen. There is self-fulfilling prophecies. Look, isn't prayer a self-fulfilling prophecy? Ask and you shall receive. Seek and you'll find. Knock and it'll be open. It's been promised. And we know that positive thinking, that prayer, that God hears and answers that, that's what we need to believe. We can't despair. Despair, what we have to fear is fear itself, basically. And that's where we're at. And so we have specific things that we have put in place for people to do. If people would start doing those things that we talk about with the committees of safety and getting the administrators to the common law grand jury together in their counties, it's actually a very easy thing to do. And it can happen very quickly because all this stuff is been documented. It's there. It's on the website. Read the plan. I don't know if you've read our plan. And there's multiple plans as far as this whole system goes, as far as putting the common law grand jury and putting the people in control again. We just have to implement it is all we have to do. Anyway, I'm getting on too long here. I'm gonna go to the next guy. I appreciate your remarks and I feel for you. I really do. And I know you feel for me, but where it's gonna come out, I don't know. What we need to keep this going on so that we can work that out. I think that we always, we have a certain ability and tenaciousness. You know, your life can be ended in a nanosecond, and yet you see some people that go through horrible things and they don't die. It's like, how can he still be alive? Well, that's how can America still be alive? I think we still have a heartbeat, and as long as we got a heartbeat, we have a chance.
Well, I'll finish up with this. I see as, according to Scripture, that we are the great Babylon. So, and if we are, it says that city, in a sense, which is the nation, is going to burn up. And, we've allowed abortion and sodomy and talking about the youth. Youth are hung up on drugs. There's hardly any male boys left without being beaten down and everything else. And God calls us to repent of our sins and turn away from them and to purge them from among us. And that's not what we're doing. And preachers are compromising on all these issues. I just would encourage everybody to make sure that they, God, 30 days or more of minutes as they could of some sort of money system and necessary goods to barter with and stuff, And like I said, if we don't repent, and then if we don't come together on these basic things, and like I said, you said a little bit different, but we're now fixing to turn the internet over to a foreign agency, and so who knows what restrictions on telecommunications going to be, and through executive orders, you know, we've allowed our president to take control of everything from communications to transportation and food and the whole nine yards. So, and now he can arrest you and make you disappear. So, anyway, I appreciate you allowing me to talk and bring us out. I just see that we're a lot dimmer than what we are, and that I believe most people do, and I don't see. We always do have hope if we repent, but like I said, from Scripture, as you say, it's nothing new under the sun, and those, before they ever came back, they was squishing mud between their toes, and you know, and they were just totally in a bondage situation. So I see that's what we're headed. So
yeah,
you know,
I agree with much of that, because that is what happened. However, don't forget, this is a global thing. The whole world is in this, and God has promised to protect His people. Well, who are His people? And He says, if those people that call themselves by My name, well, who are they? Well, we know who they are, and where, and how many does it take? We don't know. So it's up to us to do those things that you talked about, and that if there's enough of us, then somehow we'll turn it. You know what I mean? I mean, look, the only reason that you can be disappeared or anything else is because everybody's cooperating. And even this business with the internet, it only works as long as we allow it to work. Look, we got guys with technology out there that can hack them and undermine them and do things to them that they don't want you to know. They're not as powerful as you think they are. You know, I mean, look, just this year, the Soviet Union had this jet come out, and it looked like it had a big Hoover vacuum cleaner on the front, and it had some kind of RFI, and it completely disabled this Aegis-class destroyer, and then they proceeded to strafe it, like pretend bomb it. For, you know, if they really were shooting bombs at it, that ship would have been sunk and every man would have been killed on it. And the Soviet general said, it just goes to prove the more complicated you make your systems, the easier it is to take it down with something that's considered crude. And that's a point right there. Right there is what you need to take with you, because that's what it's going to take to win this battle. Forget about all the technology and all this other stuff. Look, we can rise above that, and we will. I believe we will. I think that we have that spirit and that ability, and the only reason that their stuff works is through their psyops. And so, you know, look at prayer, fasting, and planning. Because you got to be prudent, you got to plan, you got to have food stuff. Everybody should be doing. Look, we've been preaching it for how long now? You know, getting your survival food, and I think it's the Mormons or the Seventh-day Adventists. They believe you should have 2 years of food. Well, hopefully, there's been a number in the nation doing that, because that'll help us. And where it's going to go, you know what? I think it's still going to be better than living in the matrix like a zombie. You know what? When you're forced to scratch out your living, when you got to work your next meal, when you got to trudge barefoot and stuff, things take on a different perspective and value. And, you know, most people will be better off for it. And the ones that won't, they'll die. Oh, well. You know what I mean? Anyway, that's where I'm at. Thank you. I'm going to take the next question. I'm getting pretty long-winded here. I'm sorry.
Yes, this is Greg in Florida.
Yes, go ahead, Greg.
Yeah, I had kind of a three question deal. I watch Chris Ann Hall every night, and I listen to her every day. She's got something that came out today on her show about the American Bar Association is creating a new rule for their attorneys, and that is that their freedom of speech will be impaired if they participate in being an attorney anymore. They're actually, it's called Model Rule Number 8.4. And what it does is it says that even in their private lives, they cannot express their own personal opinion, say, for example, if they don't believe in gay marriage or Black Lives Matter or anything else like that. And not only that, they've also said that the Bar Association has said that they can't be associated with organizations that do stress those beliefs, such as being a Christian. So this is something she said is an action item that we need to go to our state legislators on and tell them to vote to reject model rule number 8.4. Now the other
how about we tell them to eject the Bar Association? Let's go right to the heart of it. And how about we don't hire attorneys anymore and don't use them anymore?
Well, now here's the point I want to make, though. This might be a good angle to approach the attorneys at and say, hey, if you want to express your rights, you need to be a constitutional attorney instead of, you know, you need to be joining the NLA, you know.
Right.
And
rip up your bar card. All it is is a union card, so to speak.
Okay. Anyway, but that's supposed to be going through the state legislators at that model rule 8.4. And if it goes through, they will not have any more rights to do that, even in private. Mm-hmm. And that might be a way to express a little bit of maybe finally get them to wake up. And
that's
my other third point I have is, do they have any kind of a vetting thing for constitutionality in candidates so we can vote in candidates that, you know, in each state? Do you know of any kind of common ground thing, or is that something that needs to be invented?
Well, what we need to do, what we had, is a system that they turned on its head, and it was called the committee man system, and every precinct was supposed to have a committee man, and it's still there. It's just been put to sleep like everything else. You can run for committee man in your precinct just by going out in the election season and running a petition to become a precinct committee man. And what that's supposed to allow you to do, and you need to get 5% of the signatures in your voting district. And if you get 5% and nobody else is running against you in that voting district, which most of the time they're not, because most people don't even know what a committee man is, you're deemed elected in the primaries. You don't have to run. If there's two of you, then they got to put your names on a ballot, and people actually have to pull your lever. I don't know if you've ever seen a committeeman's name on a ballot, and the reason is they don't let this process take place. And they've changed them from an elected committee man to an appointed, where they appoint them at the first meeting with the party. So traditionally, the committee men used to vet the candidates. They decided whose petitions they would carry, and you'd get them in a firehouse or something, and you got a guy that wants to run. Look, we put in a congressman here that they didn't want. It was a grassroots thing. And he was a West Point graduate, and he was kind of conservative, and we wanted to knock the real liberal guy out, so we put this guy up. We didn't agree with everything that he said, but he was our best candidate, and we carried his petitions, and we got him in as a congressman. And so that's the way that system's supposed to work. We got him in a room. We asked him, what do you believe? What about this? What about the Constitution? You know, the way they've turned it on the head now is the party bosses pick the candidates, and they send the petitions down for the committee men to walk them. And the way they got it today, because the committee men are no longer elected, if they give you a petition to somebody you don't agree with, and you say, I'm not walking his petition, they tell them, you're fired. Well, how do you fire an elected official? You can't do it. So the vetting system is to put the committee man system, which is from the mosaic system, the tens, the hundreds, from the bottom up. Let's get involved in putting our candidates in from the local level, where you actually can go in a room and you can vet you can vet the candidates whose petitions you're going to carry that gets them into office. So that's the system we need to reinstitute, and we got lots and lots of information about that. That's how we started on this NLA path, because we were suing the Board of Election based on the party system, based on what they've done to the committee man. So that's my answer to you, that you need to look into the committee man system, because that's what was given to us by our forefathers for putting candidates in, like you said, who are vetted, who are constitutional. That's the answer. That's how you get them in there in the first place, and you keep the other ones out.
Right, and there's nothing in place right now to do that.
Well, there is. It's called your party, but you see, the party rules the way they're written now, and who writes the rules is the party. If enough of us went in there and really put things back the way they should be, then we could take it over tomorrow. So that system's there. We just haven't woken up. I don't know if you've ever heard about Primary Challenge. That was a guy named Lenny Roberto that was trying to reinstitute the committee man system. Look, we discovered a lot of things when we got in. We discovered what was wrong with the system and how the rules usurped the elected committee man and turned him into an appointed committee man by saying that he's running a petition to be appointed to the position to be appointed at the first meeting. That's absolutely false. All we have to do is go in and fix those rules and make sure that these guys are brought in by their constituents signing their petitions and that they're the ones that are wadaying the candidates and putting them up and carrying their petitions. It's actually a very simple system. We need to blow life back into it. That's what we need to do. So if you could, they need to teach it in the schools. I mean, most people don't even know that each precinct is supposed to have a committee man attached to it.
Yeah, they don't want you to know that.
No, it's too, because they lose control. With every bit of this knowledge that goes out, they lose control. You know, and look, that's one of the things they don't like about the internet. They want to control it. They want to shut it down because this information is on the internet. The trouble is in order for them to control it and shut it down, it kind of hamstrings them too. I mean, China's been controlling their internet for quite a while, but look, at even the Chinese have gotten information through that they don't want them to know. You know, it's almost impossible to keep everything out. You know, especially, look, it's cops and robbers. And as the technology grows, I heard a thing. They said, look, they've been trying to control the internet for years, but every time they get a bill up to take it over, the technology changes and the bill is already old hat. Look, you buy a computer, guess what? It's obsolete the day you buy it, right? Because computer speed has been doubling every 18 months. That's Pareto's law. And it's held pretty constant since they came up with it. So, you know, you say this international organization, that international organization that they're talking about taking over the internet is none other than the UN. It's already under the control of a consortium of international people. And it's not a bad thing because it's a worldwide web and everybody has a voice in this system that they have now. But if they hand it over to the UN, forget about it. You're going to get exactly what you're talking about. You know, so that's what we have to make sure doesn't happen, that the UN doesn't take over the internet.
Right. Right. And I was looking at, like, for example, the sheriff in my county, they have a constitutional, organization that sent out questionnaires to all the sheriffs, and only one of them answered it. And of all the ones that are running for sheriff. And so obviously the only one that answered it was the most constitutional. So. That's the one I'm voting for, I guess.
Well, people got to know what to do with that. And you know, when that happens, somebody needs to step up to the plate. Look, in order to run for sheriff, you don't need to know penal law, and you don't need to know all this. What you need to know is the Constitution and common law, and you have to have a good heart. You know what I mean? No injured party, no crime, those type of things. All that statutory baloney, you know what? There's plenty of people that know the statutes. The sheriff doesn't need that.
Exactly.
You know?
Okay,
so anybody can run for sheriff. Anyway, thank you. Very good points. And we'll move to the next question. We're coming down to the
Gerard.
Wire here. Yes?
I had a couple email questions, if we could answer them quickly.
Okay, go ahead.
Hopefully the first is, currently in my county, the state has the sheriff answering to the Superior Court. Since the sheriff is part of the executive branch of government, it seems contrary to the foundation of the structure for our government, hence the separation of powers. Your opinion, please.
No, I don't know what they mean by they have the sheriff answering to the Superior Court. Look, he does go out and they give him the warrants to exercise, and he's supposed to make sure that they're signed, you know, with wedding signatures and things like that. And a lot of the sheriffs don't even know that. I had a round brouhaha with our sheriff because he was exercising warrants that came out of the family court that weren't wedding signatures that I dare say the girls were stamping them and sending them out, and the sheriff was going out and doing their dirty work, you know, on all kinds of crazy stuff. Anything that they could get a mother to swear against a father with no evidence, and then sending the sheriff out to pick him up and confiscate his guns. And when I said, look, this doesn't have an affidavit, it doesn't have a wedding signature, they don't even know how to read this stuff. So they got no business being sheriff then if they can't read that stuff. So he really is not supposed to be answering. Okay, so it's the executive branch, and he's doing their work as far as enforcing the orders of the judge. But a sheriff, it's just like Nuremberg. You can't enforce an unconstitutional order. Well, how do you know the order's unconstitutional? Well, you have to know the Constitution. Look, Sheriff Mack won the fight against the Brady Bill. He went to court, and they said, you can't tell me, the federal government can't tell me, number one, what to do in my county, because I'm the highest elected law enforcement, and the Supreme Court agreed with him. Well, if the federal government can't tell him what to do in his county, I don't think that in the county that the judge and the courts can order him to do something that's unconstitutional. Of course, if he doesn't know what the Constitution is, then he's not that safeguard that he's supposed to be. The reason he's the safeguard is because he answers directly to the people. He's an elected official. He has to go out and get votes. So to say that he's part of the executive branch and he answers to the court, I don't agree with that. And if he's doing that, it's because he doesn't know what his job is. Okay? I hope that's good enough. Go ahead.
Right. Yeah. Second question. If, in fact, the Federal Reserve defaulted on May 28, 2016, any and all foreclosures and credit card default collections / eviction actions taken by bar attorneys on behalf of banks are gross fraud, as they always have been. Any plans for common law grand jury addressing that fraud directly in the works? Why are we not addressing the criminal bar associations on the national, international, and state levels? That's it.
Well, I got one thing to say about that. Read the paperwork that we've put in the courts, because we are addressing it every day. And they're absolutely right. Look, they were fraud to begin with, and they're still fraud. And when they defaulted, I guess they became doubly fraud. I don't know. You know what I mean? How does fraud become right. more fraud? Well, the thing is they don't care. It's up to the people to hold their feet to the fire. And it's going to be, and one of the things, and people get ticked off at John sometimes because he talks about mercy and, you know, coming with an olive branch. There's so much corruption that if you wanted to go in there and you wanted to indict and prosecute everybody in this system that did something, you wouldn't have a system. And so we have to, as we come through to do this, when things get to the point where we're actually going to flesh through this, many of the people are ignorant. But some of them are not. There's some blatant stuff going on in the courts. And unless you're an idiot, you got to know it's not right. Some of these judges, and I hold the judges to a higher state of culpability, because who much is given, much is expected. And you can't tell me that they don't know that a lot of the stuff that's going on is fraud, and that's unconstitutional. And they're banging their gavel, and they're getting a kickback for putting people in jail. You can't tell me that he's happy with himself, or I don't know what kind of exercises he goes through to tell himself that that's a good thing, you know? And so I don't know what you do with a guy like that, except for I think you incarcerate him or something. He's got to pay somehow. And the ones that wreaked a lot of havoc, they got to pay the most. But as you go down through to the lower minions, the ones that Brent was talking about that just want a job, that are kind of like going along to get along, you know, the amount that they did in ignorance or that they closed their eye to, although, you know, everywhere in there, you run into a certain person that vindictively takes this on, and you'll see this viciousness in the system, even in the lower billions. Those are the people we need to go after. The ones that are just doing their jobs and they don't really understand everything, you can't throw them all in jail. You just can't, you know? I mean, when you go in, when there's a bully in the schoolyard and he's got a bunch of people following him and you want to stop him, you walk up to the bully and you punch him in the nose, even if you get your butt kicked, because you end the problem when you do that. And that's what we have to do. We have to figure out who the bully is. Most of the time it's the judges who are being run by who? The Bar Association. So the biggest thing that we need to do is take care of the judges and the Bar Association. And we even have some good judges out there, like Brent says, that are waiting. They're waiting for leaders. And once they see that the people are raising up, then they'll have the courage. The same thing with the sheriff. You can't send your sheriff up the hill with his sword hanging out, you know, with his sword out, when he has nobody behind him. Anyway, I hope that answers the question. Anything else?
Nope, that was it.
Okay. We got a few more minutes. I'm going to take the next questioner. It's, let me see. Who's the next questioner here? Kansas Jan.
Yeah, I just have two comments and a question for you, Gerard. First of all, I wanted to say about the national debt that I didn't understand what people were talking about when they said that we really don't owe those trillions of dollars. And so I can't explain it, but for the last about 6 or 8 weeks, I've been reading everything that I can about the national debt and even sat down and followed a dollar in gold from my grandpa's pocket through the Federal Reserve System. And we actually really, I mean, it's a debt-based system. It's turned around backwards about 3 times, just like the courts. And when you follow that dollar all the way through, we really do not owe that money because they did not give us anything in consideration for our promise except printed pieces of paper. So I really think that if I get that, that many, many more people of just, you know, just average, everyday people are going to start figuring out that that really isn't our debt to pay back. It's fake, and it's as fraud as some of those jail sentences that are being handed out. My second comment is that I've been trying to get some supplies pulled together, and I know this sounds elementary, but like at Sam's Club, they've got a 50-pound bag of beans for, I think it was $28, and then they've got a 25-pound cube of rice for under $10. But what I wanted to say was that leaves out the green stuff, you know, that we're still going to need if it gets that bad. And I'm kind of a health food nut and have ran health food stores before. And what I wanted to tell everybody was that you can go to a farm store. Don't go to like Sam's or Walmart, but go to an actual farm store where you can get black oiled sunflower seeds in the shell. A 40-pound bag is about $16 or $17 here. And what you can do with those, don't get the flavor. They got cherry flavor and all that, or any roasted or salted. Just get plain sunflower seeds that they feed to the birds, because the birds can't have anything that's got poison or chemicals in it. And so what you can do is you can sprout those sunflower seeds. You don't even have to take the shell out of them, but I think everybody knows how to sprout a seed, like you put it on wet paper towels and then put it in a trash bag for 3 days and then bring it out. What they call that, you let it grow for about a week, it's called sunflower lettuce. And that could serve as the green food in a real crisis. You can also take a rolling pin and roll over the shells to crack them and then pick the little seeds out. You can, if you don't have milk, the health food people have what's called seed and nut milks, and you can take any seed or nut and crush it and put filtered water over it and let it set overnight, then crush it again, and you've got a substitute for milk. And then you can do all kinds of stuff with sunflower seeds. But what I'm getting at is that I just got my supplies for under $100 that I think would last me about a year. So we don't have to spend all that prepackaged in Mylar that keeps for 25 years. We don't have to spend several hundred dollars. You can get approximately a year's worth of food for about $100. And the other thing, the last thing, Gerard, is when Karen Hudis was on, and she was talking about local currencies, did she happen to speak with you about how a local county or city would go about doing that? I mean, who did Karen say would be the one, if she told you, who did she say would be the people that would get that local currency going? And I'll hang up and, or, you know, I'll get off here and listen to your answer. Thank you.
Right. Well, there already is some local currency going in different communities, and I forget the name of the, there's more well-known ones. And you see, when they're more well-known, then they're more accepted outside of the town and county borders, because it's just like money. If it, you know, people don't want it if it doesn't have value. So, you know, some people are trading, you know, a chit that's worth X many dollars of labor or so much commodity or whatever, however they're doing it. And I forget the name of the organization that's doing it. But ultimately, it's up to the governor of the state to relax the laws. I forget the legal tender laws of what's acceptable for debt, and that's who should allow the local currencies. I mean, you don't have to have an edict from the government. Look at our right, your and my right to contract is unlimited. So whatever you and I accept as money between us is up to us, and it's up to the community. So, okay. Like I said before, I said, look at people. If people don't have quarters, they're going to use 22 shells. You know what I mean? Because that's going to be, you know, that's going to be a very valuable thing, a 22 shell. I mean, you go to Walmart now and try to buy a box of 22s. You can't even get them. So already we know that there's a value in those things, because that's a good all-around gun for all kinds of things. And so that could end up being a form of money. You know what I mean? It's just that we have to decide what it's worth between us. And I don't remember if it was Berkshire. There's a name of this currency that they're using in some states that has become very popular. And because it's popular, it's more widely accepted. So the more widely your currency becomes accepted, the more places you can go and spend it. Okay?
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Thank you.
And even that local currency, at some point, that local currency will turn into what, into gold and silver, whatever happens to be legal tender. Because look at the currency we're going to use is actually going to have value behind it. It's not going to be a promise to pay note that there's nothing behind.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting. What's that old Chinese curse? May you live in exciting times. Well, guess what? I think we're starting to live in them. So these are things that we have to put our minds to, because there are all these little problems we need to work out. And as long as we can keep the chaos level down, we can work on these little problems. We can actually have fun doing it. Of course, if your stomach is not full, you won't have fun. And you're absolutely right about the sprouting part. Look, I don't know if people know it, but when you sprout a seed, a bean, a legume, or anything like that, its nutritional value goes up almost 1,000 times. All the vitamins and minerals that come into it when it sprouts. As a matter of fact, there's a recipe, I think, in the Bible for bread, and I'm not sure if essence bread is that bread, but they used to sprout the grain, and then they would roll it, crush it after it sprouted, and it becomes very sweet. It takes on a certain amount of the carbohydrate in the part of the seed gets very sweet, and they roll it, and I don't even think they baked it. I think they sat it in the sun, and that bread. You could live off of it. It has, you know what I mean? You could forgo meat for a long, long time by eating that bread. And so you're right. I bought a bucket called Handy Pantry, and it has alfalfa. It has different
radish,
beans, all kinds of stuff. And that's a great salad. And I was doing wheatgrass too, but that gets you a little bit that gets tough because you have to have a juicer to juice that stuff. You know what I mean? That crush.
Well, you're reminding me of something. I just wanted to tell everybody one name to look up where you can find all this yummy food like that, like what you're talking about. It's Ann Wigmore, W-I-G-M-O-R-E, Ann Wigmore, and she started the Hippocrates Institute, and she's got delicious recipes like what you're talking about with the sprouts and just delicious.
Right.
So that's it. It's making my mouth water thinking about it. Thank
okay,
you, Gerard.
Thank you very much. Yep. Okay. I'm going to, let's see. It's we got about 5 minutes or so. Hey, we got Colorado Ollie on.
Hey, Gerard, here's my main gripe about these conversations and on the internet. When you have a situation, you take a piece of paper and you draw a line down the middle. You put all the positives on one side and the negatives on the other. Your resources on one side, your needs on the other. All these conversations, people come out with, the dollar's going to go belly up September 29th at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. They keep harping on the negatives and negatives and negatives. You got 500 negatives on the left-hand side and nothing on the positive side. Let's use a little logic here. One of the big negatives right now, if some of this stuff goes down, it is the worst time of the year. We are in the fall. We're going into winter. Okay, that's a negative. That's a big negative as far as I'm concerned. A positive is this. There are many deserted homes. The farther north you get, the more these homes, new or old, have more insulation in them. There are structures already built, okay? And another rule is this. For every time you put down a negative, you got to put down a positive. And then each county has got to sit down and make out this list. And line down the middle, positive on the right, negative on the middle. And for every negative they put down, they got to put down a positive. Pretty soon you're going to reach a point where people are going to find out they got a lot more positives than they got negatives. Just like that last gal that called. You can sprout, you can use bird food and grow greens. You could feed yourself off of bird food. Just put it in a potted plant, or like she says, in a wet paper towel. We have got a lot more positives than we've got negatives. We've got to start concentrating on the positives.
Well, I'm gonna give you a positive right now. If we're forced to sprout food to live, guess what? We're all going to get a lot healthier than we are right now, aren't we?
Oh, you bet. You bet we are. Yeah.
You know, we're, like I said, we're going to be the lean, green fighting machine is what's going to happen. So
and people,
you know,
are going to that, people are going to learn how to live off the grid again. That's probably the biggest positive is that people are going to learn how to live again and not depend on Uncle Sam.
Well, maybe that's the reason they'll facilitate a soft landing, because if they hear all this talk, they won't want that to happen.
Land.
They don't want it.
Land. God, where'd you get it? Where'd you get all this stuff, Phoebe?
So, anyway.
Thank you.
I agree, Alia. I think you're right. I think there are positives. You know what I mean? And we just have to see them. And sometimes, you know, you can't see the forest for the trees.
Yeah.
I would rather have my life depend more on my direct actions than right now the way I don't have control over much of it, because it's dictated from outside forces. You know what I mean? How much money I have and where I can go and where I can get things. You know, if you're forced to become more independent, at the end of the day, even though you might be working harder and you might be tired, you get to a point where you become more satisfied. You know, and I also, like when Obama was first running for office and people were going, oh, what are we going to do if he gets elected? And I was going around telling people, I hope he gets elected. And they look at me like I got three heads. And I said, because if Mitt Romney gets elected, all the people that are sitting there wringing their hands going, what are we going to do if Obama gets elected? We'll have to think of something where if Mitt Romney got elected, look at that box would still be, look at this currency reset was going to happen whether it was Romney or Obama. But if Romney was in there, all the Republicans and all the conservatives, oh, we're in good shape. And they would have just laid back. So what he did is he went in there and did ridiculous things because he could, because he promised to, and he woke a lot of people up. And every time he talked, more people went out and bought guns. Pretty soon we got signs hanging up, Gun Salesman of the Year, Barack Obama, and all this stuff. There's all the positives you're talking about, right?
Yep.
Because it backfired. A lot of it has backfired. And look, we got to keep that momentum going. And ultimately, we know that these evil people are, you know, that God leads them around like a bull by the ring in his nose. As big as a bull is, as powerful as he is, I don't know if anybody's ever messed with cows and bulls, but like I don't care how hard you kick them or punch them, they don't feel it. But you put a ring in his nose and you can turn that whole 2,000-pound bull with a ring in his nose, he'll turn, you know?
There's only one other way that I know of for sure from first-hand experience.
You hook a
neon transformer up to electric fence, and when that bull puts his nose on the fence.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. Yeah. Yeah,
I just get tired of all this negative crap and nobody come out with any solutions. We got to start thinking solutions and positives, not all this. We get tied up in these negative rumors and all this, and we need to get out of the box, get out of that box, that thinking box that got us locked up in. Start thinking for solutions.
Well, for one thing, my biggest selection, and I'll end with this, is turn the freaking television off.
Yes.
Because it doesn't help anything, and it keeps us all distracted. And I knew this woman hadn't watched, she locked her television up, didn't want her kids watching it and stuff. She lived on a farm, and she said there was some series coming on she wanted to see. And of course, what do you get with the series? You get the commercials. And she said, every time I watch that series, she says, I walk away with the hankering to buy a new SUV because they got that commercial. She said, I'm telling you, I didn't care until I watched that show, and they got me wanting an SUV now, you know? And that's what they do for you, you know? Anyway, thank you, everybody. Well, we've come to the end of the show, and I'm sorry I didn't get to everybody, but we'll talk and keep your work going. Everybody who's sending me stuff about, land taxes and court cases, I've got some good stuff came in, and keep sending them, and we'll see what we can. We've had, we didn't even talk about it. Like you said, Ollie, there's been some good, positive things happening in the court. There's been some great victories. We didn't even touch on that tonight because we got so much other stuff going on. But we got some stuff that's been coming in lately from other places that we haven't even talked about or discovered yet, and they've been victories in the court. So somebody's starting, I think the crack is opening. I think the crack is opening, so keep it up. Keep sending your stuff, and we'll keep going on. Thank you very much.
I just had another gift dumped in my lap. I found out that Angus McIntosh, he lives in Colorado. If he's up in Craig, which is up in northwest Colorado, I'm get a hold of him and start working with him. In fact, October 27th up in Delta, up by Grand Junction, Jeanette Finnicum, Sheriff Mack, and Angus McIntosh are all going to be there. Me and Lindsay's going to go to that meeting. Of course, I'm going to get hold of McIntosh probably tomorrow and start working with him. So that things just keep keep dumping these gifts on my plate, and I got to run with them. But anyway, thanks, Gerard. We'll talk at you later.
Okay. Thank you. Good night, everybody.